U.S. history occurred this morning in a dormitory and classroom on opposite ends of the campus. As many as 33 people, including the gunman, were killed, and at least 26 others were injured. It is not certain if the gunman was a student and whether he killed himself or was shot by police. His identity has not been confirmed yet. Eyewitness reports say students jumped out of the windows in a panic. This is the Quality News Network. On the Virginia Tech campus today, the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history occurred this morning in a dormitory and classroom on opposite ends of the campus. As many as 33 people, including the gunman, were killed, and at least 26 others were injured. It is not certain if the gunman was a student and whether he killed himself or was shot by police. His identity has not been confirmed yet. Eyewitness reports say students jumped out of the windows in a panic. Few captured the chaos on their cell phone cameras. The president of Virginia Tech called it a tragedy, quote, of monumental proportions. President Bush spoke to the nation in a televised address this afternoon. He said that the violence affects every student across the country. For the second day in a row, parts of the East Coast, especially the New York and New England areas, are being drenched with record rainfall by a strong nor'easter storm. Heavy rain caused evacuations of hundreds of residents today, while hundreds of thousands of customers are out of power. Overall, there have been 9 storm-related deaths. In Baghdad, 6 cabinet members who are loyal to radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr resigned today. They are protesting the refusal by Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to set a timetable for U.S. troops to withdraw. The U.S. military reports that 5 more American soldiers were killed in the Iraq War. 3 of them died in combat today in Baghdad. The 2 others were killed on Saturday in the Anbar province. In northern Afghanistan, as many as 10 policemen were killed by a suicide bomber today. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for the suicide attack. The British government has decided to stop using the phrase war on terror to describe the struggle against political and religious violence that has been widely used since the September 11th attacks. A British cabinet minister said the description strengthens the terrorists and makes them feel they are part of a larger struggle. Tomorrow, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez will appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee to answer questions about his role in the firing of 8 federal prosecutors. The wife of author William F. Buckley, Jr., Pat Buckley, has died at the age of 80. She was a prominent charity fundraiser in New York. The 2007 Pulitzer Prizes were announced today. The Wall Street Journal won 2. The Oregonian newspaper was awarded for its coverage of a missing San Francisco family lost in the Oregon mountains. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Heads up, crew. This is Captain Mike from Bombardier's Lounge, World War II Big Band Jazz. I've got a book for all of you crew members interested in World War II in the air. Its title is Letters Home, Memoirs of a World War II Troop Carrier Pilot by Frank G. Hathaway. Hathaway's book is dedicated to the air crewmen who lost their lives in the Southwest Pacific, 1942 to 1946, while flying their unarmed C-46s and C-47s over the jungles, the ocean and mountains in New Guinea and the Philippines. In his book, Frank talks in his letters home about his experiences flying as a pilot with the 6th Troop Carrier Squadron, the first squadron of troop carrier planes in the Southwest Pacific. This is a book you're really going to enjoy having in your library. It's available at Amazon.com. Get this book. Ask for it by name. Letters Home by Frank G. Hathaway, published by Trafford Publishing. That's an order.
A new medical study of 500,000 American retirees finds that 1 extra daily serving of fruit or vegetables could reduce the chance of developing head and neck cancer. Microsoft wants authorities to carefully review Google's proposed $3.1 billion purchase of DoubleClick, an internet advertising company. Microsoft had lost out to Google on the bidding for the company. Sallie Mae, the nation's largest student loan lender, will be purchased by a private investor group for $25 billion. Yahoo announced an expanded partnership with the newspaper industry to sell advertising online. There are now 264 newspapers in the group representing 44 states. Google and Clear Channel Communications reached a long-term advertising deal. Google will place ads targeting Clear Channel's online customers on more than 675 stations. Walmart has pushed ExxonMobil out of the number one position on the Fortune 500 ranks of largest companies in the U.S. ExxonMobil is now number two. Walmart made more than $351 billion in 2006. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.61 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 108 points at 12,720, NASDAQ up 26, S&P 500 up 16. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six and a half minutes past the hour, we have made it to Monday, and a black, grievous Monday it is. I don't know how to do a show after being bombarded by news such as we have had out of that sleepy little college community of Blacksburg, Virginia today. I am loath to speculate on what happened. We know some very basic facts. We know there was one shooting spree early this morning, and then 2 hours later, half a mile across campus or so, there was another shooting spree by apparently the same person. And that in between time, no one was able to stop this person. And we know that at present, most news agencies are reporting that 31 people are dead, and another 20-some-odd are injured, anywhere from lightly to critically. That is what we know. That is practically all we know. I had occasion to hear a little bit of National Public Radio's coverage an hour ago, and they had audio that was captured on a cell phone of gunfire, just bang, 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 bang. And it's astonishing. Guess what? It's also not surprising. Everything I've just told you is just about everything that I know about what happened in Blacksburg, Virginia today. I've read every piece of news I can get my hands on, and there's just not a whole lot of information. Two more have died. The death toll now stands at 33. We know that there was a bomb threat at Virginia Tech last Friday, and then again at the beginning of the month. We know that something was simmering there. Now, those are the facts on the ground as we understand them. Let me tell you, I hesitate, quite honestly, although we as liberals, as progressives, as decent human beings want to reach out and express our grief and our pain, our shared pain with those who are suffering, who are agonizing, who are in anguish that is incomprehensible to anyone who has not been through something like this. We want to do that, and I want us to have a chance to do that. If you want to do that, you know the phone number, 304-658-5453, if you can afford it. If you cannot, we will pay the freight, 877-443-2366. And we will process, and we will talk about this, and we will try to make some sense out of this. But there are two things that came immediately to mind, and you know, I don't know, maybe this is wrong of me to say it, and you can, I'm watching the chat room, we're taking calls, I'm watching my email, you are free to tell me if I'm stepping over the line. And if I am, I won't wait till 2 days later like Don Imus and apologize once it looks like somebody's actually noticed. If I do something wrong on this program, I will apologize because I recognize that it is wrong, not because I got caught. But what I'm gonna say, there are two things that came to mind, and I'm going to go ahead and share them with you. And this is speculation, and it is as much speculation as I'm really willing to go into where this is concerned, because there is too much agony right now. But I can tell you two things that I do not know factually, but that I am as sure of as I am sure that the sun will rise in the morning and that the little green apples will give you a bellyache. One thing is this. The instant that they heard about this at the White House, George Bush looked up and said, "See if you can tie it to the Iranians." Or see if you can tie it to Al-Qaeda. That's the first thing. The second thing is that they are in full-on sweat condition alpha at the headquarters of the National Republican Rifle Association. Their paid PR whores are spinning for all they're worth. Because what little information is coming out of Blacksburg indicates that these were semi-automatic weapons that were used. And they realize that perhaps, perhaps, every time this happens, America looks up and says, "Why in God's name do these agencies of death have to be so freely available among us?" Now please bear in mind that when I say this, these are words that are coming out of the mouth of a gun owner, a gun shooter, a gun collector, a gun, dare I say it, fancier. But there are no 57 round banana clipped the Israeli manufactured Tech Nines or whatever in this house, and there will not be, because there's no call for it. There's no deer rifle in this house with a 6 or 7 round clip in it, because you know what, if you can't get Bambi on shot one, shots 2 through 7 or 2 through 9 are wasted ammunition and are more likely to do a lot more harm than any effective good in the hunting scenario. But at the headquarters of the National Republican Rifle Association this evening, there is an entire army of lawyers and PR flacks who are working to come up with the best possible spin on this. I know what they would like to trot out, because they've done it in the past. The National Republican Rifle Association, a wholly owned subsidiary of the GOP and Smith & Wesson and Winchester and the Browning and Colt and all the other arms manufacturers, they do not represent shooters. They represent arms manufacturers. In the past, they've been known to come out and argue, "Well, if there'd just been more guns, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Somebody could have shot back." To which I cry, "Bug spray!" But you know, inside your heart, you know that it's going on. You know that inside the headquarters of the National Republican Rifle Association, they are trying to put their best face on this. If it hasn't happened already, inside of 12 more hours, you will see a spokesman for the National Republican Rifle Association come out and say, well, we feel it our duty as the guardian of the Second Amendment here to remind America that guns don't kill people, people kill people. And that when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. And the saddest thing of all is that because the National Republican Rifle Association has such an ungodly amount of money, they will be able to buy that opinion from the American people. And suddenly suddenly the debate will be shifted from why someone would go and do such a horrible, horrible thing. The whole debate will shift, and why was it? No. We can't question gun availability in this gun-crazed nation. Well, we don't need more laws to control semi-automatic weapons. We've already got enough laws on the books. We just need to enforce the laws what we done got. Tell that to the grieving parents, you jerks, you NRA sleazes. This is why this continues to happen. We couldn't have any meaningful reform after Columbine because of the NRA. Now it's happened again. We're not going to have any meaningful reform after this either. And it makes you ache, and it makes you feel like something. Well, I'm not going to tell you what it makes you feel. I feel sick. I was on a college campus this past Friday. I had a meeting, and I was up at Harvard on the Mon in Morgantown, dear old West Virginia University. And I can't imagine what it would be like to know that some freak with a gun was running around wiping out students indiscriminately. And see, I'm old enough now that I look at the students there, and I looked at the guy I was there with, and he said, you know, they all look like children, don't they? And I said, yeah, that's 'cause they are. They're babies. They're just babies. Because, you know, we've got this legal thing where we define an adult in the United States as someone over the age of 18. Newsflash, no, they're not. I got lots of proof lately that being 18 does not make you an adult and does not make you capable of adult decisions. And our children, we want our children to go to a good university, and we want our children to be safe. We want them to be happy, and we want them to have a profound educational experience that will set their minds rolling on a lifetime of introspection and thought and consideration. And then you get up, then you see garbage, hell, damnation like this. And you know that in the White House they're trying to figure out a way to capitalize on it. To feast on the blood. Because that is what they do in the White House. They are blood merchants. And that's what they do at the National Republican Rifle Association. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back to your calls. Again, the phone number, 877-443-2366. If you've got a national calling plan or unlimited long distance or something like that, maybe save us a nickel, 304-658-5453. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. This is the voice of sanity in a gun-crazed nation. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves that he's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Past the hour, as we contemplate all this misery, one thing I want to share with you before we go right to the phones. A student reported that, Kristen Heiser said she was in class about 9:30 a.m. when she and her classmates saw six gun-wielding police officers run by a window, apparently responding to the Norris Hall shooting. We were like, what's going on? But this definitely is a quaint town where stuff doesn't really happen. It's pretty boring here, said Heiser during a phone interview as she sat on her classroom floor. Student Matt Waldron said he didn't hear the gunshots because he was listening to music, but he heard police sirens and saw officers hiding behind trees with their guns drawn. They told us to get out of there, so we ran across the drill field as quick as we could. 3 days after a bomb threat forced the cancellation of classes in three buildings, according to a radio station in Roanoke, Virginia. To the phones, Andy calls from the UK. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Yeah, this is kind of crappy.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to call in today because it's not really a day for me to be superior about European culture, but I had to ring in when you said, how long is it going to be until the NRA get their spin out there? And I'd like to announce that an affiliate organization of theirs, Virginia Citizens Defense Militia Force,
students is carrying guns, this year wouldn't happen.
He did, to be fair to him, he did say adult students, and I'm assuming he means teachers as well. But, yeah, basically he reckons they should have all been packing.
Oh, Lord. That would have been fun.
Well, yeah. And he also took pains to mention that it wasn't an automatic weapon, so the automatic guns ban wouldn't have made any difference. And I don't think anybody actually knows what weapons were used yet, do they?
Well, what did, I mean, now, did you take pains as you read that, Andy? Did it say it wasn't an automatic weapon?
He said it was pistols and handguns. He said it wasn't automatic weapons. Now, I don't know, because we still don't have any information over here what the guns were. But he took great pains to say it was handguns.
Well, if it was handguns, then it could have still been a semi-automatic.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the line between automatic and non-automatic weapons is blurred at best, isn't it?
Well, automatic means you squeeze the trigger once and it keeps shooting until you let the trigger up.
Yeah.
Semi-automatic, you've got to keep squeezing, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to chamber around every time, or you know, or make the cylinder turn. It all happens.
No,
as a
function. But I mean, there are pistols that are fully automatic, aren't there? Say.
Yeah, well, they can be. They're illegal. Yeah. They're illegal to own without a whole bunch of paperwork here.
Yeah, but you can go in Ohio and stuff, for example, one of the less restrictive gun states. You can just go to a show and pay in cash. So, you know, okay, are all those guns that they're selling? Like, one guy, a BBC correspondent, was, like, at one, just, you know, doing an investigation into how easy it was to buy guns. And one guy bought 87 handguns at one show in cash.
Not surprising.
87. I mean...
Yeah, and where are they? And yeah, where are they going to go?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's a law in Virginia that says you're allowed one gun a month. That finally got passed. I mean, even that's insane. One gun a month. Why do you need one gun a month? Why can't you?
I'm sure it's. I'm sure if it hasn't already been, that at some point it'll be challenged in court as a violation of the Second Amendment, Andy.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean. You know, look, here's the thing. Canada proportionally has the same number of guns for its population. And if you do the kind of math, then America has 8,000 too many deaths a year from guns.
Mm-hmm.
You have 11,000 deaths a year, and for the country of your size and the number of guns compared to Canada, you should only have about 3,000, 3,500.
Well, see, and that, Andy, is largely because we can't have a sane conversation about firearms in this country because of organizations like the NRA and various militias and so forth. Because if you mention that, well, I mean, the District of Columbia, the court there overturned a 30-year-old law that said no, you know, no handguns in the inside the district, and the court made up a bunch of right-wing freaks made that decision based on a reading of the Second Amendment that nobody else in the country takes.
Yeah. And the weird thing about that one, of course, is the District of Columbia is where George Bush spent quite a lot of time, so you would have thought they could be getting even more restrictive around there.
Well, but you see, the Republican Party is so beholden to the
NRA.
To the NRA that I can almost guarantee you this was another case of the Justice Department rolling over.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like they rolled over on the appeal of the conviction of the election phone jamming sleazer from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before we can have a sane, or if ever.
Well, I think you need to move around the gun side of things and start having to talk about what's wrong with your society that causes the murders. Because let's be honest, even if you did manage to just, you know, say I develop a transporter beam tomorrow and I beam all the guns in America out just tomorrow, you're still going to have people knifing each other to death over the same thing.
Knives, you know, when ball bats are outlawed, only outlaws will have ball bats.
Well, that's the thing, and you know, I mean. The problem is the NRA have got half the argument right. It's not, you know, guns don't kill people, people do kill people, and their argument is therefore kind of half right, and that's the ultimate form of lie, isn't it? You know, have some truth in there. And the problem from our point of view is we always end up getting hung up on the guns part of the argument. Let's just move beyond that.
Well, what fascinates me is if you go and you look at the Second Amendment, Andy, it says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to a free nation, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. Or so, that's pretty close, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite word for word, but not far off, man.
Well, and the condition precedent to the right to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged is the reference to a well-regulated militia.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is you're supposed to turn up on Sundays and drill. And
yeah, and I don't know a right-wing gun owner that has the guts to get out there and face somebody else's bullets.
No, well, that's the thing. I mean, they like shooting varmints, as Mitt Romney put it.
Right.
You know, they like shooting stuff that doesn't hurt them. I mean, it's just, we've got a silly situation. We've got a bunch of rich, powerful people, and it's a microcosm of what I always talk about. You've got a bunch of rich, powerful people making money off selling semi, fully, and non-automatic weapons to people in America. And as long as they're able to make bucket loads of money out of it, then you're not going to stop selling all of these guns. You're not going to stop with the armor-piercing rounds on the streets and stuff like
the
that.
The business of America is business.
Well,
including the gun business.
It's the maximum possible profit.
Yeah. Now, tell me, Andy, I mean, was I off base in saying that at some point in the day, somebody in the White House, probably George Bush, said, try to tie this to Iran?
Oh, everything gets tied to Iran or Al-Qaeda. They're trying to tie anything to Iran or Al-Qaeda. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, well, did George Bush even become made aware of this before he was stuck in front of the camera with a speech? Probably not. But somebody in their rove or one of his minions did, certainly. I mean, you know, we give George Bush too much credit. He is a coke-addled, alcohol-sodden, back-on-the-booze fool, and that's true. And, of course, you know, the reason he's such a fool, the reason he's the president is because he's such a fool. He's for everyone to look at and laugh at while the rich get on with the business of looting the country. And the world.
Oh, and by the way, this just hit my email box. The right-wing echo machine has kicked in.
Yeah.
Press release. Virginia Tech shooting gun bans are the problem, not the solution. Yeah. When will we learn that being defenseless is a bad defense? Asked Larry Pratt, executive director of Gun Owners of America. All the school shootings that have ended abruptly in the last 10 years were stopped because a law-abiding citizen, a potential victim, had a gun. I told you.
Well, I'd like to see the actual cases where they were stopped, because I don't hear about any of them.
No, that's the liberal media, Andy.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, I don't have a liberal media. I have the state propaganda machinery, and we hear about everything that happens in America, good or bad, because from our point of view, it's always bad. We can laugh at it, or at least be, oh, God, not again, not in America. So we'd hear about both sides of those, and we never do. We never hear about shootings that are stopped by... I mean, like the story they like to go on about the subway mugging where 12 handy citizens pulled guns from handbag and briefcase and stopped the muggers. Apparently that's happened once.
Mm-hmm.
And never again.
Right.
How many people are mugged on the subway each year in New York? I mean, the problem is not guns again. The problem is actually psychotic people and people who are just nuts and people who have got... I mean, ultimately it comes down... Most gun crime comes down to people who are too poor to get things the normal way, so they steal them, and in the process they use a gun, and then somebody gets shot.
Well, Andy, I've got one more inquiry.
Yeah.
In light of what we had to put up with for the last week and a half with the so-called debate over Don Imus, which, you know, really didn't reach you guys, because you don't have to put up with that garbage.
Well, we heard about it, yeah.
But I wonder, you know, in light of the fact that the fallout from Imus's firing is creating this whole stupid business about... when are we going to rein in those dangerous Negroes with their rap music? I wonder how long it's going to be before these before the gun freaks can find a reason to blame skin color for this.
Probably not very long. I mean, the problem again there is they have a kind of point. I mean, you know, what do these fools think they're doing talking about women like that? Tell you what, man, if one of those guys, those rappers came over here and spoke about my mother or my girlfriend or my sister like that, I'd kill him. I don't care how hard he thinks he is. I don't care how many times he's been shot. I'd rip his head off.
Exactly.
I mean that. I'd tear his head off. And I don't care who he thinks he is and who they think they are. It's the same with all these little rappers down in London. And they're all vicious, mean, sick little men. And just like the white guys that mimic them. And then think, oh, why am I getting fired? They're sick and they're vicious and they're small. And I hate them.
And these things make for a society that's not pleasant to live in.
Yeah, it was going back to my point. You know, what is the cause? Is it rap music? Well, no, but rap music's another outlet of the sickness. And it comes down to the ruling class wanting us to destroy ourselves, man. It always comes back to that. Always.
Well, as long as we're at each other's throats.
And if we can make them some money at the same time. I mean, how many black guys get rich off rap? And how many white guys get richer?
I'd say the latter is disproportionately larger than the former.
Well, that's the thing. These white executives were laughing their asses off when rap came about, especially when it stopped being political hip-hop and became gangster rap. Because political hip-hop I like. There's a lot of stuff I like.
Yeah.
The only difference between that and gangster rap is the lyrics, because the beats are all pretty much the same. And the lyrics in gangster rap...
This coming from a DJ himself, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I know of what I speak. And hip-hop is political, and okay, sometimes it's got rude words in it, but then so is Johnny Cash and other things that are political, you know. But the majority of hip-hop is good stuff. The majority of gangster rap is just trash. And it's trash marketed by fat white guys in suits to make themselves more money.
Well, you know,
that's the most ironic thing about all of it.
And well, by the same token, look at the population demographics in the United States, Andy, and you get a pretty good idea of who is driving the market forces behind the popularity of this music.
Yeah.
Here's a hint: it isn't the black community.
No, no. I mean, I don't know what percentage they make up in America, but it's probably about the same as over here, sort of 10 to 15.
Well, I'm going to sound real geeky, but I go to, my son's 11 years old. I go to try to buy him a pair of jeans in the store, and I can't find a pair of jeans for an 11-year-old boy that doesn't have a crotch at his knees.
Well, that's been happening for a while now, man.
Yeah, well, I know. I'm dating myself and sort of damning myself as a fogey and a geezer. But how do you, I mean, it, you know, if you're living the thug life and you got to really put the feet to it, how do you run in a pair of those?
I think you don't. I think you're supposed to, like...
Oh, stand and blaze?
And then get caught, yeah. Pull your gun out and then get shot dead.
Jesus God.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the whole thing's ridiculous. I mean, that's why, you know, all of their stuff is so unreal. These rappers that talk about being in the hood and all of this. Most of those boys are middle-class black boys. They've never been to a hood, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just sad and pathetic, and they're talking about stuff they don't really know about, or if they know about it, you know, the few that do actually come out of one of these ghettos, they just don't get it, man. They've been handed a big wad of cash and told by a white guy in a suit, rap boy, rap. And he's rapped away, and he's been given some more money. And he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what he's doing. He doesn't understand what he's talking about, really. I mean, most of them are, what, 18, 19, 20? They're kids. They haven't got a clue.
And it's not that much different from the artists who got exploited in the rise of rock and roll or the rise of big band. There's always been a promoter there ready to make the money, and he's got a pre-printed contract with a lot of fine print that says, I own the songs, you perform the songs, we'll keep you on beans and cornbread while I get rich, and you know, don't be you know, getting uppity or anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, about 5 years ago, the main thing was all these manufactured boy bands and girl bands, and now that's being used up and nobody's interested. The main thing is being pushed is gangster rap now.
Well, you know, they'll reinvent the monkeys sometime soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, they'll run out of steam and they'll start on something else, you know. I mean, I specifically got into the music scene that I'm in because it's completely counterculture. There's no way they can market it to people. I mean, you can't market techno to people.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. But, you know...
It's not something you're going driving down the road snapping your fingers to.
Well, you're more going driving down the road bouncing up and down in your seat, smashing your head forwards and backwards, like headbanging at the same time as like everybody else who's driving past you going, what is that god-awful noise? That's techno. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the problem is a sick culture. The problem when it comes to any of these things is it's not... You can never say the problem is the end result. That's always it's the symptom, you know. And we've got to get to the cause, and the cause is capitalism. And I'd argue that. Not buying stuff with money. I mean, big C, corporatist, capitalist. We're going to take everything, and we're going to make you fight each other while we do it. And that's what it's all about. And it's sad.
And, you know... And apparently this thing's... And there's so, the details are so poorly elaborated... This thing started with a shooting of two people at 7:30 in the morning.
Mm.
Tragedy enough,
mm.
The guy goes a half mile across campus to another huge building and does the other shoots 50, 60 more people.
Yeah, I mean we're being told that they're not even sure it wasn't two separate incidents, like one shooting and somebody left and then somebody else decided to go and start shooting. I mean, it could be. You know, so there could still be a shooter out there who's run away.
Well, they, of course, they told us the same thing with Columbine, because they couldn't believe that, you know, an individual or two could, you know, pull off something like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, it's a big campus and all that, and there's a lot of people there, but...
Yeah, 2,600 acres.
Yeah, and it happened before university started, and as I understand, most of them live outside the campus. So there were only 9,000 students on campus when the first shooting happened, and so they should have just shut the gates and told all the other students, no, go home, I'm sorry, and they should have searched the place thoroughly, locked it down, but they didn't, and the reason they didn't... probably too expensive to lock it down and search it thoroughly.
Well, instead of that, what we've got is a report here from Tiffany Ote. She said that she and her classmates thought the gunshots were construction noise till they heard screaming.
Yeah.
And police officers with their bulletproof vests and machine guns entered her classroom. She reports, quote, they were telling us to put our hands above our heads, and if we didn't cooperate and put our hands above our heads, they would shoot.
Yep, militarization of the police. Get everyone used to... It's just an opportunity to try out their military tactics and everything. I mean, most of those police officers probably didn't know what's going on anyway. Most of them were probably told there's someone with a gun in there, go and stop people shooting each other.
Well, these are, you know, these are campus cops, these are Blacksburg cops, these are whatever that county in Virginia is, maybe some Virginia State Police. And you know, they were as horrified as anybody else in the situation. And there's nothing, you know, and but that breeds a very dangerous potential situation, Andy.
Especially when they're all carrying M16.
Yeah, terrified police are not a good thing.
No. I mean, that's why the whole if everybody there was armed thing. Well, maybe they'd have stopped the killer, but maybe there'd have been a whole bunch of bullets flying through windows and other people getting killed.
Well, what does this say? Friday, they had to cancel classes in three buildings because of a bomb threat. And then on April 2nd, they had to evacuate a building after police received a written bomb threat. All this on the same university campus.
Yeah. All you can kind of hope is that it was this person that was doing those things, because then that'll stop. But it's society, man. There's something, we've been bringing our children up wrong, and I'm part of the generation that's been brought up wrong. And to be honest, you baby boomers are to blame. Your fault. You screwed up. You let them get away with it, man. You guys who grew up in the 60s and the 70s, you let the government steal all of our rights. And they've formed us.
Well, over here, Andy, there was a feeling that having caught Nixon and run Nixon out of office...
Well, he's never run out of office. He was allowed to walk away. Run out of office is where he literally flees the country before he's arrested, or the other alternative is he's arrested and impeached and put in prison as a traitor and a thief and a liar.
But you know, now I'm at the very tail end of the baby boom. Okay, I'm literally the next to last year that still qualifies as baby boom. But a lot of them, if I understand correctly, you know, helped bring the Vietnam War to an end, helped get rid of Nixon.
Yeah, and then they stopped.
And then said, well, our job's done.
Yeah, yeah. Then they gave up, and they let people like Reagan and Thatcher screw.
Well, how many? And look, I mean, let's be fair. I'm gonna piss off the boomers, baby boomers that are in the audience, of which I am one. But how many baby boomers count themselves among the demographic that eagerly voted for George Bush, eagerly voted for Bob Dole, sat in mute, abject horror to find out with shock that a man like Bill Clinton had consensual sex with someone beside, or some sort of sex with someone beside his wife? How many baby boomers voted for Ronald Reagan?
Mm-hmm.
George Bush the first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fair inquiry, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, my mum voted for Margaret Thatcher, and I love my mother to pieces, but I can't forgive her for that, ever. I can't, because Thatcher screwed me and my entire life, and the reason me and Hazel can't have children is because there's no future for them. You know? There is no future. If we were to have children, Hazel would be better off if she dumped me and got rid of me. Because if we're together, there's zero benefits available for couples or married people in Britain. But if she's on her own with a child, they'll just throw money at her. You know? And it's been set up that way because they're trying to destroy the family. So why isn't it possible to support... I don't give a damn who goes to work, male or female, mum or dad. Why isn't it possible to support a family with one worker? Why does every child have to go to university so they can hope to get a degree, so they can hope to get a job that may let them at some point not have to scrimp and save for money all the time? You know, why are there students who are so pressured they might go out and start killing their other students? Because this system has been set up by the right wing.
It's been gamed. Yeah, it's been turned into a con. I don't know if you heard the top of the hour news or not, Andy. But it turns out that the government organization that administers student loans is being privatized and sold off to a private entity.
Yeah.
Now I make I make a joke from time to time about, you know, being hounded by the student loan secret police. You know, personally, I figure if we turned the student loan secret police on Osama bin Laden, we'd have him day after tomorrow. They can fight anybody.
Yeah. This is the thing, you know, your country, right, you've heard of asset stripping, yeah, venture capital or vulture capital,
sure,
as it's sometimes called. Yeah, well, this is what's happening to your country. You're being asset stripped. Germany owns your water supply. France and Japan have split up the electric between them. Britain and France and Germany own most of your chemical industries.
Australia bought up the Indiana Turnpike.
Well, China owns probably half of your interstate roads and most of the companies that service them, and your steel industry. You know, America's being asset stripped. People out there don't know what it is. Look up venture capital and see what happens. And that's what's happening to your country. You've been bought up by a little cabal of rich people who've invested, and they invested in Diebold and ES&S, and those investments paid off. And now they're stripping the assets and they're selling things to everyone. And they're stealing the money. I mean, you know, the ruling class is at war with itself. Don't believe they're one great big unified group that are all out to get us. They are all out to get us, but they're at war with themselves as well. And that's our opportunity. We can exploit that.
We're the pawns, but you know they're out there after each other's knights and bishops and rooks and so forth.
Well, that's the thing, and they'll reach out to grab some of these pawns, and we might just turn around and chop their hands off. That's what we've got to do. This is the thing. The horn is so important. Things like, I mean, even Nova M, although it's more terrestrial radio, anything that's web-streamed is so important, because anything that lets the citizens become the media means that they can't rule us anymore, you know? You know, the reason these... Look at the way the mainstream media deal with this crisis, this tragedy today. They'll go on, it's a tragedy, why do these things happen? They'll have a bunch of people talking about the individual psychology, maybe, you know? And they won't talk about the main problem. They won't talk about the problems of society that created this. I mean, they might go on and on for a while about the whole gun debate, but again...
No, because if they do, Andy, Glenn Beck and Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Laura Ingraham and the rest of that filthy crowd will call them liberals. And they would, and the mainstream media would rather be negligent than be called liberal. They would rather avoid this debate.
We're being played with that game, Bob. We're being played. The mainstream media are so conservative it's unreal, and they're not scared of being called liberals. They don't give a damn what Rush Limbaugh says. They're doing exactly what their corporate masters want them to do, which is keeping quiet on anything that would cause social disturbance, i.e. when we want to readdress the balance, because they see that as bad. Now, you know, the people who run those companies, General Electric, why would General Electric want people to stop buying guns? They make money off guns, Bob. And remember, none of them are in the business of making anything except the maximum profit.
Yeah, let's remember that E.I. DuPont de Nemours got its start in the U.S. as a gunpowder manufacturer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the main thing is making money, and that's why the media won't address any of the issues in society, because society falling apart disastrously and having, you know, psychological breakdowns left, right, and center, and having families breaking up and having people killing each other and having, you know, cars crashing on motorways and having all the horror that we have in modern society, all of that is profitable, okay? Profitable, and that's what it always comes down to. So they won't address the main issues. They won't even bring them up, because if they bring them up, people might start thinking about them. If people start thinking about them, they start asking questions of the media, and then they have a hard time keeping it stum, yeah? I mean, it's literally, Rush Limbaugh and all of those crazies, they're the propaganda machine. The media is just a corporate finance organization that are trying to make money for the corporations. I mean, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, yeah? Okay, they're a bunch of fascist propagandist tools, and we know that. But the rest of them, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, whatever, all of those things, they're just there to make money for corporations. And the sooner people wake up to that and stop saying, what's wrong with our media? That's what's wrong with your media. They're there to make money for corporations. They're not there to give you the news. They're not even there to entertain you, really. They're there to make the maximum possible profit. And if that means lying to you, they'll do it. If that means ignoring the truth, they'll do it. If that means just finding, and on a lighter note, there were some bunny rabbits today stories, then they'll do that.
Look, it's a little girl eating an ice cream with a squirrel.
Yeah.
I know. It's frustrating and it's disgusting. Now, I take a little bit of a difference with you, because I do believe that because of this 40-plus year onslaught of calling the media liberal, because once upon a time, at least in little corners here and there, Andy, we had some responsible journalism going on.
Well, that's the thing. A business by the corporation.
Well, but it's also been put out of business. And, I mean, you can see it every day. This business about a liberal media. I got a soundbite from Glenn Beck here. We'll run it a little bit later. Calling ABC, owned by Disney, the liberal media. There couldn't be anybody less liberal than ABC on the face of God's green earth.
But he's saying that for his audience. He's not saying that for ABC's benefit. He's not saying that. He doesn't actually think that ABC will change the way they do things, and they won't.
No, he's saying that for the benefit of his audience.
Yeah.
But by the same token, that audience turns around and repeats the big lie in classic Nazi fashion, frankly.
Yeah.
And creates a mindset. I mean, look at Katie Couric. God knows what. Not a journalist, but she gets the job anchoring the CBS Evening News, Andy. And because she has been excoriated for being a liberal, the first person she has on her free speech segment is Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, but that's because Rush Limbaugh is worth money to CBS. Well, who was it? CNN, yeah?
CBS.
He's worth money. I mean, how big is his audience? So they might come and watch some CBS. That means that they can tell the advertisers, oh, we've got a big star on. We can make more money off your adverts, so pay up or we'll give them to someone else. That's what that was about, you know. I mean, he's worth money. If there were liberals out there who were actually worth anything, because most liberals who are worth money stay out of the limelight, you know. And that's basically
it. Yeah, because it's more fun to go off and enjoy the money.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And call yourself a liberal, sure.
You know, I mean, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are both apparently liberals, and they both apparently just vote Democrat. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what's been reported. You ever hear them say anything about anything? No, but if you get a right-wing celebrity, they're right out there. And the reason for that is just because it's more conducive because of George Bush and his right-wing media, right-wing propaganda teams that he has, including Rush Limbaugh, who's been paid by the DAP for, I don't know how long, and all those others who want to be Rush. I mean, they're just paid by the DAP propagandists. I mean, we know that. And yeah, people will repeat the big lie, but 90% of the people they repeat it to laugh at them and think they're stupid. And the other 10% probably just missed it when Glenn Beck said it the first time around. You know, I mean, we've got to face facts. Those people are way out there, man. They're not even 5-10% of the population. They're crazies. And most of them are rich crazies that we needn't think about anyway. I mean, I don't think many poor black people listen to Rush Limbaugh, do they?
No.
I'm guessing he doesn't have a very big following in the Hispanic areas of the country either.
No, that's true.
So. So he probably gets listened to by rich white people on the
Yeah, this days. Is angry, rich, terrified white people.
Yeah.
Who again, to sort of bring this back in circle, do have access at some levels to shaping the nature of the debate in this country.
Well, yeah, but that's why the horn is so much more important than what you all call the mainstream media. That's why blogs are. You know, crooks and liars, what a sight. Just shows them telling their lies over and over again.
Yeah, and our friends over at Media Matters for America.
Same thing. And that's the thing. It's vital that people start on this sort of stuff, and we just start ignoring the mainstream media. I mean, we've just got to put them to one side and go, look, I don't know what mainstream is anymore, but you're certainly not it. Get out of my face. I mean, if they call us for interviews, we should just go, well, we're not really bothered about talking to you, to be honest with you. We might do an interview at some point, you know, when it's convenient for us, call us back later. Just don't play their game. Yeah. You know, and whenever there's any opportunity to show them up, we've got to show them up, and we've just got to keep spreading the word. That's it. I mean, the internet is one of the greatest military revolutions in the world, and they can't believe they let it get away from them. And we better make sure we keep it.
I hope we do. I hope we do.
We better have. Well, rest assured that Europe will keep the internet free and open for as long as we have a Europe. But that means you guys are going to be only able to access stuff outside the country, and you better start getting the software that lets you through the U.S. state, United States yeah. national firewall now before they put the firewall up. Start looking at the stuff they're using in China, because I don't think it's going to be long before the George Bush administration try to put something like that into action.
I don't either. I can only hope that these persistent stumblings that they're getting, that they're engaging in now, Andy, will slow them down enough that they can't pull it off between now and January 20th, 2009.
Well, the problem, of course, is not now January 20th, 2009. It's the people that will come back with the next administration that's Republican that will be the same people. I mean, you know, how long has Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld been popping in and out of U.S. government for? Last 40 years or something?
No, they learned at the feet of the master. They were both little acolytes of Nixon.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, their little acolytes are ready and waiting for the next opportunity. So,
that, of course, is proven by the, 150 graduates of Regent University Law School that have, as it's now been discovered, have infiltrated and infested the executive branch of government.
I know.
You know, this is Pat Robertson's law school, Andy, and as Bill Maher said, it's not real hard to get into. All you got to do is forswear Satan and draw a pirate on a matchbook. You got to read one book in 3 years, and you know that's the Bible, and that's the source of all law, and boom, you're a lawyer. I mean,
I know that one's amazing. I wonder how well those lawyers do in court. How many of their clients actually?
Well, again, Bill Maher noted that Monica Goodling, who rose to be the number dig it, Andy, number three at the Department of Justice in the United States, with no experience as a prosecutor, no experience as a trial lawyer, had probably never tried so much as a petty theft case in magistrate court, gets to be number three, having graduated from Pat Robertson's law school. Well, you know, she's taken the fifth, and she's refusing to testify before Congress, and she has hired a lawyer to defend her in case any charges are brought. Guess what, Andy? She didn't hire one of her alums from Regent University. She hired one from somewhere that they going through law school is a miserable 3-year experience.
Yeah, someone from somewhere where you do law school and you walk in, the library building's bigger than any of the other buildings on the campus.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, none of this draw spunky school of law for no.
No, of course not. You know, that's only for throwing at the peons and the masses.
But there's 150 of these freaks in the Bush administration.
Yeah, of course there is. I remember, because loyalty is more important than aptitude or ability in the Bush administration. And the number one thing that will have been slammed into that bunch of freaks is loyalty to, well, God through the Bible and through his priests on earth. And since George Bush and Pat Robertson are the two priests, two messiahs on earth, aren't they?
And James Dobson and a couple other minor deities.
Well, it depends who you ask. Yeah, I mean, James Dobson would say him and George Bush, and Pat Robertson would say him and George Bush, and, you know, it's one guy and George Bush. Then.
God, it's all turning into a Monty Python skit, isn't it, Andy? I'm Jesus of Nazareth, and so is my wife!
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Well, we're up against it, but it's good to talk to you. Thank you for chiming in. I really did want some perspective from outside the U.S. this evening, because this is one of those evenings that it's hard to be American.
Well, if I hadn't heard that freak from the Virginia Citizens Militia say what he said, I probably wouldn't have phoned up tonight, so you can thank the right wing for that.
All right, Andy, you take care.
I will do. Love to the family. Goodbye, man.
Bye now. Are you satisfied with living in a half-crazed, violent society? Do we just write, well, you know, we come from a pioneer past and we killed everything that moved 100 years ago? God. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got news coming up. Your phone calls are welcome. Whatever it is you've got on your mind. 877-443-2366. If you need to ring in on our nickel, that's fine. If you've got a plan of your own, 304-658-5453. Yeah, I reckon we're due for the blues. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. On the Virginia Tech campus today, the deadliest shooting rampage in U.S. history occurred this morning. The shooter opened fire in a dormitory and later a classroom, killing as many as 32 people. The gunman's also dead, but it's not certain yet whether he killed himself or was shot by police. 9 deaths are being blamed on a strong nor'easter that continues to dump record rainfall on some New York neighborhoods and wreak havoc on the rest of the East Coast. The National Guard's been called out to help with rescue and evacuation efforts in parts of New York. Travel and power in many areas has been interrupted. In Baghdad, the political bloc loyal to Shia leader Muqtada al-Sadr has pulled out of the Iraqi government. The 6 cabinet members resigned to protest the refusal of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to set a timetable for U.S. troops to withdraw. A weekend of violence across Iraq has left at least 92 dead, 4 of those U.S. troops. Yesterday, 30 more bodies were found dumped throughout Baghdad. They're believed to be the victims of Shiite death squads. Roadside bombs killed 8 people in Baghdad today, and 3 Iraqi policemen died in a friendly fire incident with U.S. troops. In northern Afghanistan, a suicide bomber ran into a police training field and blew himself up during morning exercises. 10 policemen died, dozens were wounded. Officials blame the attack on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. The French newspaper Le Monde reports French secret services warned the U.S. about the Al-Qaeda terrorist threat in the year before the 9/11 World Trade Center attacks. The paper says one of its 9 reports was titled "Plan to Hijack an Aircraft by Islamic Radicals" and was handed over to a CIA operative in Paris, but was never mentioned in the final U.S. commission's report on the attacks. The BBC says it has no verification of a claim by a Palestinian militant group that it has killed its reporter, Alan Johnston. Yesterday, 2 previously unheard-of groups claimed it had executed Mr. Johnston. He was kidnapped at gunpoint over a month ago in Gaza City. And tomorrow, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez will appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's going to answer questions about his role in the firing of 8 federal prosecutors. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
A new medical study by the National Cancer Institute of 500,000 American retirees finds that 1 extra daily serving of fruit or vegetables could reduce the chance of developing head and neck cancer. The U.S. Olympic Committee has chosen Chicago as the American candidate to host the 2016 Summer Games. Chicago will now compete with foreign cities such as Madrid, Rio de Janeiro, Rome, and Tokyo. Google and Clear Channel have signed a deal permitting Google's online advertisers to be broadcast on Clear Channel's 675 radio stations nationwide. The financial aspects of the deal have not been released. The World Trade Organization says China will move ahead of the U.S. this year to become the world's 2nd largest export nation. In March, retail sales in the U.S. jumped 0.7%. That's the fastest rise since holiday sales in December. Analysts credit an early Easter and spring-like weather for consumer enthusiasm. Wall Street opened the week on the upside. Profits at Citigroup and that increase in consumer spending has investors looking on the bright side where the economy is concerned. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.67 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow closed up 108 points. The NASDAQ up 26, the S&P up 16. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Prison.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Six and a half past the hour, hour number two. Many thanks to our good buddy Andy in the UK. I always appreciate his thoughts. And hearing from a boomer herself, our good friend Cindy out in the great Northwest. The boomers, she says, were forced to quit by robocops all over the nation, coupled with the fact that for the first time in American history, women had to work to keep a roof over everyone's heads. They took away our wages. Wages have been flat since early 70s. Repeat, they took away our wages and forced us to knuckle under and work too many hours. In those days, we did not have child care. We were put up against the wall financially. They also doubled our Social Security taxes. They crushed my generation financially, so we couldn't continue the fight, and so it went. The World War II generation didn't let go of the government string until they all started croaking in the 1990s. Our generation has had no voice until Clinton got elected, and that was a turning point. And that's a little bit like something that I've pointed out in the past, namely, we can't end the Iraq War because we can't have protests that last a day, a week, a month, because we have to get back to work or they will fire our butts. Oh, yeah, And get, just in case there's any young boomers like me or Generation Wussus that's behind me thinking about this, guess what? They got you by them, too. It's at least worth thinking about. Cindy also points out, with regard to the shootings, she asks, just what do you do when the dictator is in the White House and when he usurps your well-regulated militia? Because, you know, our well-regulated militia, our National Guard, is, of course, somewhere else besides protecting America. Yeah, remember when Katrina hit and we said, gee, where are all the amphibious vehicles that the Louisiana National Guard has for just such an emergency, and we found out that the amphibious vehicles had been moved to a desert. Geniuses. But she asks, you're kind of defenseless without your well-regulated militia, aren't you? Wouldn't you then need to be armed? And asks, did you know that an armed citizenry ensures that it cannot be overrun? Saddam knew that when he armed all the Iraqis. They're doing a hell of a job standing off the Americans, aren't they? And there's some truth in that, but, you know, somehow or another, I don't see my ability to own a shotgun as co-equal with the government's ability to own an Abrams tank or those jet fighters that they're fond of zipping over the rooftop every so often here. But I guess I'm just a little crazy that way. Let's go talk to David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
I'm okay.
All right.
A little weird around here.
Yeah, you know, about the Virginia School Tech shootings, I just want to say this, that I find it extremely odd that they say that, now, if this is true, they chained the doors and he lined people up, shooting them one by one. Here's what I find odd about this, that everyone in that room knew they were going to get shot, and that one person wasn't like, ah, I got to do something. I got to throw a chair. I just got to do something. And to me, when I see people run out and, you know, jump out windows and know they're going to die, I mean, again, when you're in a situation like that, someone should have thrown something or something like that. And I come to find out he ran across the campus after he shot two people. Again, you got to take some adrenaline and tackle that guy.
Well, I suppose some would say, David, that it's easy to say that as we sit here calm and comfortable in our respective surroundings. I don't know what I would do faced with a circumstance like that. I've always wondered about the power of numbers, because if one person's got a gun and there's 30 people there...
That's what I'm saying.
This guy wasn't a professional gunman, okay?
Exactly. Someone could have knocked his hand easily. He only had two. He was firing off two pistols, correct?
You know, it's to me, it's all speculation at this
point.
Yeah.
Okay. And allegedly, this was because of a his girlfriend. He was looking to find his girlfriend. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that the problem is that this that so many people we say, oh, it's never going to happen in this school. It's never going to happen in this school, and we don't have like a any kind of training or anything like that. And it doesn't have to be with a gun. I hate when people say that.
Yeah, but dig it. I mean, I told Andy about getting this stupid press release. I mean, here's some more of it.
Right.
The latest school shooting at Virginia Tech demands an immediate end to the gun-free zone law, which leaves the nation's schools at the mercy of madmen. It is irresponsibly dangerous to tell citizens that they may not have guns at schools.
What are they going to do when the gunmen shoot the gunmen? The NRA is not going to be able to defend themselves on that.
Well,
so maybe they're just digging themselves their own grave.
Yeah, this drives me nuts, though. I knew it would be out, and bang, I barely started the show, and there. And who are these sleaze merchants, these PR people, who are sending me these solicitations that I give precious radio time to these unmitigated bloodthirsty freaks?
I think the problem is that so many people, they have to. You know what it is, Bob? They have to meet their bottom line, and they've chosen their profession. And no, I'm not going to back out of it. And I know there's some dilution, there's some distortion to it, there's some corruption to it. But I have to be doing a good thing, and that's what it is. It's about the bottom line. I've talked to a lot of people like that. I've talked to some people. I have some friends. I mentioned this before. I have a friend. She's in the salesmanship of conservative radio. I say, why do you do this? And I say, what does he do? Well, she goes, well, it's a job, and I get to learn how to do sales. And I work in that way, and I ask, but you know that technically the radio that you're working with is toxic to a lot of people and a lot of influences in our society. It divides us and rips us apart. You know that, right? And this is where the line and everything starts to distort, and the clarity, it's no longer focused anymore, and there's nothing you can say because somebody's got to make a living as something. And that's the sad, I mean, that's the sad reality. I mean, people don't understand that when you get into corporate media, which is, let's face it, a lot of it is just corporate media, right? So if you're going to get into media, what are you going to do? You're going to get into corporations. At first, it seems exciting, okay? It seems like, okay, I can do this, I can do that. You look at something like MySpace, right? My friend Foley, who's the music director for Miles Davis, he has an interview on the Last Miles site.
Yeah.
And he says, why is it that people don't understand the concept of MySpace? It's not your space, it's someone else's place. Read the contract. Every single word is not yours. And when I'll send it to you, Bob.
And that's really part of the reason I don't blog there.
Right. It's an amazing piece. He goes into YouTube. He goes into, why should you have albums out now? And, I mean, he just totally obliterates everything that mainstream society wants you to believe. Again, let's look at, you remember you said there's so many people in the streets, and people say, well, why there aren't so many people in the streets? You want to know why there aren't people in the streets? Because there are people on the streets in the Matrix, in the web. There are people there every day in every corner.
You mean we're sort of in our pajamas sitting behind the keyboard?
Well, not in our pajamas, whatever clothes we're wearing, whatever uniform it happens to be. Wherever we are, we could be walking down the street texting something in a cell phone. That's what we have to do in this era, and that's just the way it works.
Yeah, where virtual reality becomes more real than,
But you're making a neon light protest signs, basically. Virtual neon light protest signs everywhere you can. And here's the kicker about it. Everyone that is in the media world that you are in opposition to you is scared of you. Don't believe what people are saying because they're scared of you. And I'll tell you why. Anonymity? Oh, they got your IP, but they don't know who you look like. They don't know your background. They don't know.
Yet.
They don't know the details. They can't just say, oh, that's a hippie. It's a hippie. I can run that footage. It's a hippie. You see? It's the invisible man. And they don't understand how many people they think, oh, it's gotta be move on, and they don't realize that no, it's not move on. It's every single person who has a voice or some kind of dissenting concern at that moment. He might be the most laziest SOB in the world, but he just decides to say, you know what, I don't agree with that, da-da-da-da-da-da, and that's his protest. Wherever it goes, whether it becomes viral or not, or whether it catches on. And I think a lot of people don't understand that that's why you have somebody like, which really bugs me out, is how can Jon Stewart coddle to someone like Ryan Williams now? He has the Ryan Williams head in the background.
Yeah.
And he really loathes any kind of media that is different from a point of view. And in a lot of ways, to me, Jon Stewart is a lot like me, although there is this weird eeriness to it where, for example, when Colbert called up the president of Viacom and asked him about, you know, the legal law in, you know, how you, the YouTube suit or whatever it was at the time. I mean, it's just kind of weird. It's like you're coddling, it's parroting, it's diluting things, and I'm not clearly sure if you're really with us or not. And I mean, I understand you're there for the laughters. Great. I understand you're there for the ratings and the paycheck. But eventually, you know, some people are going to have to look around and say, I got to do something. Which is something, for example, which was what Rosie O'Donnell did. She did her little thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she thought. She said, I don't care about this anymore. Why? Why is it such a taboo to talk about this? You know, she could have picked a number of things. Personally, I wish she would have talked about Katrina. I mean, if you want to talk about the demolition
right.
and all of that, knock yourself out. So, you know, when you look at things like when we look at things like that in perspective, with the shooting, for example, Bob, remember I was telling you a few months ago, I said if we have another shooting that's 10 times as worse as Columbine, do you think they're going to call that gunman a terrorist?
Well, the jury is still out on that because. At least as of the last time I updated on the story, they hadn't fully identified him because they said he didn't have any ID on him.
Oh, so they call the alleged gunman.
Yeah.
He's not the terrorist yet.
No, he's not. Well, he won't, and he will remain not the terrorist until it is absolutely ascertained that he is not an American citizen or not Caucasian and most assuredly not a Republican.
If we were fighting the Asians, they would call that guy a terrorist in a heartbeat.
Sure. And I mean, if this guy turns out to be a Malaysian Muslim or something,
yeah,
the Al Qaeda connection will be made in the following 15 seconds. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of what happened,
right?
But I know. I mean, we know from Richard Clark's book that was never, the guts of it, they never, the Bush administration never refuted. Richard Clark was told. On 9/11 to go out and dig and find some evidence, not find out who did this, find some evidence to connect Saddam Hussein to this. Do you remember that, David?
Yeah.
And he came back and he said, there's no evidence that Saddam had anything to do with this, Mr. President. And Bush looked at Richard Clark and said, well, go find some that is. So I've got a pretty good idea how these blood merchants in the White House operate. I am sure that Stephen Hadley was called in. Some junior birdman was called in and said, "See if we can't make this an Iranian terrorist attack. See if we can't at least tie it to Al Qaeda," because that is the way that these people operate.
You know what's interesting about the whole school shooting is that. I think that this whole sends a subversive message to do it again, because the reason is we will make you a star. We will plaster you after you have been that martyr.
And we will call you by all three names. Mark
right.
David Chapman, John Wilkes Booth.
Right, right.
Sure.
But I mean, even now in today's society, even more so, because your name can instantly be everywhere at that second you make that shooting. Whereas...
Well, it serves a second purpose too, David. And
yeah.
That is, it serves to continue to terrify the American people.
Oh.
These, because this will be used for publicity purposes for the war spending bill. Okay? Alberto Gonzalez was supposed to be testifying,
tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow. I just got this little piece of breaking news. The Senate has postponed to Thursday the Gonzalez hearing because of the Virginia Tech shootings.
Isn't that something? I mean, hopefully Leahy. I'm really hoping. I'm not that optimistic though. I'm really hoping that Leahy sticks to his guns. I'm hoping that a lot of people understand that the crucial time that we're in, and they hold accountability to them. Now, with that said, before I go, I wanted to mention one other thing.
Okay.
One other story. I noticed people are getting an outrage over Lionel taking Sam Cedar's spot.
Mm-hmm.
People have to understand. Lionel has an audience of 1.5 million people, allegedly. He was recruited into pulling that slot. I think it's a good move for Air America. I think it's a great move for Lionel.
If they're paying him.
Yeah, they probably are, because he knows the game. He's been in it for 18 years, so I would assume he's up on that. And Sam, I mean, not to say he's gullible, but Sam's pretty innocent when it came to Air America paying him. He thought he was going to get that. I mean, here's a veteran. Lionel's a veteran. He's been in the business 18 years. He has that built-in audience.
Yeah, but would you call Lionel a liberal?
You know what? That's an interesting thing. I mean, I don't care. Personally, I don't care if he's labeled liberal or not. If he shares most of the positions I do, that's all I really care about. Just having somebody, a critical thinker out there that thinks about things and is able to put issues and to just be able to put them out there and let other people decide what it is they think about this particular issue, whether it comes from a legal standpoint or like a philosophical standpoint. That's what I care about. When I heard the reaction on when I was reading on the Mike Malloy boy, and they were talking about, oh, Lionel doesn't know this and that and this. I mean, he's done whole shows on a variety of topics. He has the ability to transcend at that moment.
I heard him one night on the way home take apart the economic ramifications and the neocon economic plan for Iraq.
Right.
Long before we ever actually heard about it. And it was brilliantly done.
And remember, here's the guy who admits what the positions he's for. A lot of people just backpedal and say, well, I don't know if I said that, like a politician. But he admits that. He admits that he was for the war at the moment when it started, because he said he was at the center of 9/11. His brain was discombobulated. He was a building a block away or whatever it was.
And he wanted to kill something.
Yeah, he thought, but then he started saying, you know, I couldn't believe how foolish I was. Why didn't I look into the project for the new American century? And see, a lot of people, they wouldn't say that on the air. They would say, well, I never said that. Like, what is his name? The Democrat on Huffington Post, Eric Bollhardt, whatever.
Bollhardt, yeah.
I don't know if it's Bollhardt, so maybe I should record. But you know what I mean. I mean, so when you look at somebody like Lionel Zafoirus, I look at him as sharing him to the audience on a number of positions. When someone wouldn't talk about, see, that's another thing. When someone wouldn't talk about 9/11, he was like, wait a minute, why aren't you guys talking about 9/11? Why aren't you talking about this issue and this issue? Why are you so afraid of that? And that's the thing a lot of people couldn't understand on the Daily Coast site. Bob, they banned the topic of 9/11 from the issue. I mean, I'm not that interested in it,
Jesus.
But the fact that they banned the word and the topic, you can't talk about 9/11 on the blogs. It's not allowed. I mean, come on. It's a progressive blog. I mean, if someone has a moment where they're like, hey, I want to do a, you know, I, it's my own independent blog, right? No, it's not independent. It's part of Daily Coach. You can't do that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. David, thanks so much, man.
No problem, Bob.
Have a good night.
All right, later.
Bye. I get it. There's something rattling around in my noggin. And I somehow think, and okay, I'm not going all beautiful mind on you, and we're not going to get the Reader's Digest out and the highlights for children and things like that, and come up with a commie plot. No. But I can't help that, you know, when we have things like what happened at Virginia Tech today, we are compelled to look at ourselves. The problem is that we look at all this happens within the frame of the mainstream media news cycle. And what we wind up doing is looking at ourselves and going, oh, okay, that's enough looking at ourselves. Time to look at something else. Well, what happened at Virginia Tech today made the IMUS thing look pretty insignificant, didn't it? But you know what? Everything is part of it. You can't look at an isolated event inside American culture and say that it exists in a vacuum, because it does not. Part and parcel of the back end of the IMUS thing is the right-wing reaction of, well, now we're going to have to go after those dangerous Negro rappers because they are much worse than Don IMUS. I mean, that is what's going down. And how dare Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson complain about this? Don't you know that Jesse Jackson said hi me one time? Okay, so what is this, some sort of racial algebra where we have to balance equations? And the fact that Jesse Jackson said Hymie Town. Okay, well, I'll take your Hymie Town and I'll raise you a Mark Furman. How's that? But this all does tie together. Really, really, really it does. These are all manifestations of a very, very, very sick culture. It really is. Just for the sake of argument, I've made a habit of going over to welcometopottersville.blogspot.com, and our buddy the blogger Jurassic Pork. And of course there was a reprint there today. I believe it was the Bob Herbert column, and in the responses to all this business about IMUS and Beck and Limbaugh and that whole filthy crowd, Hannity, O'Reilly, Savage, Laura Ingraham, it goes on and on and on, and you know, all the way to, see, that's the difference between liberal talk and conservative talk. They've got this little farm league down there of wannabes in 100 watt AM daytimers in Busted Knuckle, Texas, that are dreaming that someday they'll get the support of the Heritage Foundation and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and all those right-wing think tanks and the GOP, and they'll be rich like Rush, and all they have to do is be a little bit more hateful than him. They've got that. We don't. We have no farm system. You cannot get a young liberal progressive talker on a radio station somewhere. If you get a liberal talker, 9 times out of 10, it's somebody that they pulled out of the newspaper who doesn't translate well to audio. You know, a lot of this audience is very fond of Mike Malloy, as am I. Mike, if I recall correctly, got his start doing a weekend gig at WSB Atlanta, and he honed his craft, and he worked at that trade, and he worked at that art until he got where he is. And still, Rush Limbaugh's lips and tongue could fall out tomorrow, and he remains a multimillionaire. The same doesn't apply to our buddy Mike. Mike's got to keep working. So that level of support isn't out there. I'm gonna shoot through the break here, Agnes. I want to see if we can sort of tie the seams together. First off, I want to take you, IMUS was disgusting. IMUS was filthy. I'm glad he's fired. He should have been fired 15 years ago. But IMUS was an ice cube to the right-wing hate machines, the iceberg. Now, this is, for instance, this is Glenn Beck talking about Hillary Clinton. Okay, and wait, there's a bad word or two in here. And, you know, I listened to our good buddy Dr. Bill, for whom I have a great deal of reverence, earlier today, and he sort of said that, you know, if we're repeating it, then we're somehow equally guilty of it. Then I will take that guilt upon myself. Because, you know what, I don't want you to go listen to Glenn Beck, but I'm grateful for folks like Media Matters for America who call him out on this kind of garbage. And if this means that I'm making it worse, well, I'm going to have to make it worse tonight, because the fact of the matter is, America needs to hear... America doesn't... This Snoop Dogg, oh, for God's sakes. This guy's out there every night talking to white bread America. His, you know, as Andy noted, his demographic among African Americans or Asian Americans or Hispanic Americans is probably not statistically measurable. It is white, power-wielding male Americans that this guy appeals to, and to whom he is and by virtue of that appeal, he is in turn shaping thought.
I don't want to sound like the old ball and chain guy, but Hillary Clinton cannot be elected president because, am I wrong in feeling, am I the only one in America that feels this way? That there's something about her...
Here it comes.
...vocal range.
Her vocal range.
There's something about her voice that just drives me. It's not what she says, it's how she says it. She is like the stereotypical... Excuse the expression, but this is the way to... She's a stereotypical bitch.
She's the...
You know what I mean? She's that stereotypical nagging... You know what I mean? When she's... And she doesn't have to be saying... She could be saying happy things. But after 4 years, don't you think every man in America will go insane? Is it just me? I know this is horrible to say, but I mean it not because... I would say this if she were Condi Rice, and she sounded like that. Condi
really?
Rice doesn't have that.
Yeah, we know what you say about Condi when
voice.
The mic's off, Beth.
You know what I need to do? I need to talk to a vocal expert. I need to... Because there is a range in women's voices that experts say. Just the chalk and, I mean, the fingernails on the blackboard. And I don't know if she's using that range or what it is, but I've heard her in speeches where I can't take it. Am I alone? Dan, have you ever noticed that about her?
Oh, my gosh. She could be talking about how she's giving every American $1 million, and I'm hearing, could you take out the garbage now, please?
That really is what it is. I thought it was just me, and maybe it is. I'm sorry for being such a pig, but please, America. Please. I don't think I could do it for 4 years.
It's a comedy program.
Sure, the country's going to go to hell in the handbasket. But is it like, can we make this about me for a second? I just don't think I could take it from her.
Okay. So this guy has decided that it's this. How shallow can an American be? You know, they say that Abraham Lincoln was not a great speaker. The Gettysburg Address, the guy who spoke before Lincoln spoke for 3 hours at the dedication of the Gettysburg Military Cemetery. Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address on the back of an envelope or something on the train to Gettysburg, got up, spoke for 2.5 minutes, and did so not very well, and nobody remembered a damn thing he'd said. Glenn Beck would have judged Abraham Lincoln call me a pig here, but I don't think Abraham Lincoln is much of an orator. I mean, that guy that spoke for 3 hours, he's a talker now. He is a Lincoln, 2.5 minutes, This is what you get. This is a hell of a lot worse than Snoop Dogg. Now, bear in mind, Agnes, we're going to start it and we're going to stop it. I want you to get the same cut. I want you to not pause it, just stop it. We won't have to restart it. But pay attention, because this has meaning. I'm not doing this for the, you know, because I get some jolly out of hearing a right-wing freak refer to the junior senator from New York as the B word. Okay, but I want you to pay attention to the grammar. All right?
I don't want to sound like the old ball and chain guy, but Hillary Clinton cannot be elected president because am I wrong in feeling, am I the only one in America that feels this way? That there's something about her vocal range. There's something about her voice that just drives me. It's not what she says. It's how she says it. She is like the stereotypical...
Is.
Excuse the expression, but this is the way to... She's a stereotypical bitch.
Stop it.
You know what I mean?
She is. She is. She is. She is. Now, if you say that somebody is something, you are calling them that, right? Not in Glenn Beck world.
Hello and welcome to the program. So glad that you have tuned in today. Golly. We've got an awful lot to talk about today. You know what? I'm going to let you do a lot of the talking. I've got emails that people are very upset with me about what I said about Hillary Clinton yesterday. As soon as I get some audio, I'm going to play and make my point, but I've got to make it with audio. And I want you to... You tell me where I'm wrong. When I said yesterday, Hillary Clinton sounds like the biggest nag on the planet.
No, see, he didn't say that.
Sounds like the biggest nag on the planet.
No, he said is.
I never said that Hillary Clinton, excuse the language, I never said that Hillary Clinton was a bitch.
Yes, you
did. I said she sounded like one. It has nothing to do with her policies, has nothing to do with her personality.
Okay, stop it. I can't stand anymore. Do you remember the hissy that the filthy, lying, hypocritical right wing had over? We got to impeach Bill Clinton because he said he didn't know what the definition of is. And this guy's tap dancing around. You heard the clip. I didn't monkey with that. I didn't alter it. I didn't do anything to it. She is, she is, she is, and has the nerve to come back the next day on his program and say, I didn't say that. I said, she's like it. As if simile somehow has lost its force within the English language. Of course, that's the difference between me and Glenn Beck. I know simile, I know metaphor, and I know the difference. That's the difference between me and Glenn Beck. I'm intelligent. Glenn Beck is a right-wing freak who just talks hate because hate is easy. Peace is hard work. Compassion is hard work because the people that you're called upon to have compassion for, a lot of times, they don't engender it in you. So you got to dig deep for it. But this guy is so damn shallow that, I don't think I could take for... Yeah. So, in other words, what this goober has said... I called him a goober. Oh, I'm cheapening the discourse! Jesus! This guy just admitted that if Hillary Clinton proved to be the absolute best president that the United States ever had, and everybody got a check for $10 million in the Hillary Clinton administration, he couldn't stand it for 4 years because because he's so damned shallow, he'd have to listen to her voice. This guy reaches about 3 million people on his radio show. I don't know what the ratings are like at Headline News, a place that I used to be proud to, kind of get the occasional paycheck from. Mother of God. But this guy's still getting a pass. He's still on CNN, Headline News. He's still getting paid day in and day out, and he's not having trouble making the credit card payments. Just like so many right-wing talkers, he's a recovering something or other. In this case, I think he's a drunk and a junkie who gets behind the microphone every day and makes insecure, Insecure, doughy white males feel better about themselves, and, you know, oh, we're losing America to the brown people. Not Glenn Beck. He's an American. Wasn't it Glenn Beck that was behind some of the escapades of burning the Dixie Chicks albums? Wasn't that Beck? Yeah, I think it was, wasn't it? Okay, so we're having a full-on hissy about Snoop Dogg, who I hear is a decent golfer. We could probably have play around to golf and, you know. Yeah, and probably, because golf is the great equalizer. You could put Richard Nixon and Willie Nelson on a golf course. Nice shot there, Willie. I know, for golfers, non-golfers, it's probably hard to comprehend, but it's very much true. So, we're going to have a hissy. And like I said, this all got started because I happened to be over at Welcome to Pottersville blog. Welcome to Pottersville.blogspot.com. And there was the talk about, you know, the ongoing discourse about, you know, we've got to clean up the gangster rap, and we got to clean up the thug music, and they can't be calling these women what they're calling, talking about doing to them, because they're all the time, these black people, they're all the time talking about how they're going to do violence, they're going to kill them and beat on them and whoop them. And you know what? They're right. Thanks to one of the posters over there at Welcome to Pottersville, I want to share some rap lyrics with you that are disgusting. Talk about violence to women. Good God. What has this country become? I took her by her pretty white hand. I led her down the banks of sand. I plunged her in where she would drown and watched her as she floated down. That's one. How about another one? Early one morning while making the rounds, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down. I went right home and I went to bed. I stuck that loving 44 beneath my head. Man, that's sick, isn't it? Can you imagine just talking about women that way? Can you imagine? First time I shot her in the side. Hard to watch her suffer. But with the second shot, she died. Delia's gone. One more round, Delia's gone. There's only one problem. The first lyric was from Banks of the Ohio, a traditional song first recorded by masters of their art, Bill and Charlie Monroe, in 1936. Then the second one, about the business, about the shot of cocaine and shooting the woman down, that would be John R. Cash's version of Cocaine Blues. And then the last one was Brother Cash as well, Delia's Gone. But, you know, that's all in the past. We used to be like that, right? We used to be that way. I mean, that's a long time. I mean, you know, that song about with the cocaine and the 44 and everything, that's a reworking of an African-American, just an American folk song called Little Sadie, first transcribed in 1922, right? Right, yeah, okay. So that was a long time ago. Well, not so long. Not so long at all. How about that hero of the protest movement? How about Neil Young? Sit back and listen. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. How'd you do, Neil? Shot her dead.
But see, it's those scary brown people and the songs they're singing. You know how it is with them. Horse feathers.
This disgusts me. Here, okay, you know, just in case you think, oh, wow, you know, Bob, it's a 20th century thing. Okay, let's try this. Long about 1871. This will probably take us up to the top of the hour. The editor of the Memphis Avalanche swoops thus mildly down upon a correspondent who posted him as a radical. While he was writing the first word, the middle, dotting his I's, crossing his T's, and punching his period, he knew he was concocting a sentence that was saturated with infamy and reeking with falsehood. I was told by the physician that a southern climate would improve my health, so I went down to Tennessee and got a berth on the Morning Glory and Johnson County War Whoop as associate editor. When I went on duty, I found the chief editor sitting tilted back in a three-legged chair with his feet on a pine table. There was another pine table in the room and another afflicted chair, and both were half buried under newspapers and scraps and sheets of manuscript. There was a wooden box of sand sprinkled with cigar stubs and old soldiers, and a stove with a door hanging by its upper hinge. The chief editor had a long-tailed black cloth frock coat on and white linen pants. His boots were small and neatly blacked. He wore a ruffled shirt, a large seal ring, a standing collar of obsolete pattern, and a checkered neckerchief with ends hanging down. My God, he sounds like he's living a thug life, doesn't he? Date of costume, about 1848. He was smoking a cigar and trying to think of a word, and pawing his hair, he had rumpled his locks a good deal. He was scowling fearfully, and I judged that he was concocting a particularly naughty editorial. He told me to take the exchanges and skim through them and write up the spirit of the Tennessee Press, condensing into the article all of their contents that seemed of interest. I wrote as follows. Spirit of the Tennessee Press. The editors of the semi-weekly Earthquake evidently labor under a misapprehension with regard to the Dallyhack Railroad. It is not the object of the company to leave Buzzardville off to one side. On the contrary, they consider it one of the most important points along the line and consequently can have no desire to slight it. The gentleman of the Earthquake will, of course, take pleasure in making the correction. John W. Blossom, Esquire, the able editor of the Higginsville Thunderbolt and Battle Cry of Freedom, arrived in the city yesterday. He is stopping at the Van Buren House. We observe that our contemporary of the Mud Springs Morning Howl has fallen into the error of supposing that the election of Van Werder is not an established fact, but he will have discovered his mistake before this reminder reaches him, no doubt. He was doubtless misled by incomplete election returns. It is pleasant to note that the city of Blathersville is endeavoring to contract with some New York gentlemen to pave its well-nigh impassable streets with the Nicholson pavement. The Daily Hurrah urges the measure with ability and seems confident of ultimate success. I passed my manuscript over to the chief editor for acceptance, alteration, or destruction. He glanced at it, and his face clouded. He ran his eye down the pages, and his countenance grew portentous. It was easy to see that something was wrong. Presently, he sprang up and said, "Thunder and lightning! Do you suppose I'm going to speak of those cattle that way? Do you suppose my subscribers are going to stand such gruel as that? Give me the pen!" I never saw a pen scrape and scratch its way so viciously or plow through another man's verbs and adjectives so relentlessly. While he was in the midst of his work, somebody shot at him through an open window and marred the symmetry of my ear. "Ah," said he, "that is that scoundrel Smith of the Moral Volcano. He was due yesterday." And he snatched a Navy revolver from his belt and fired. Smith dropped, shot in the thigh. The shot spoiled Smith's aim, who was just taking a second chance, and he crippled a stranger. It was me. Merely took a finger off. Then the chief editor went on with his erasure, his interlineations. Just as he finished them, a hand grenade came down the stovepipe, and the explosion shivered the stove into 1,000 fragments. However, it did no further damage except that a vagrant piece knocked a couple of my teeth out. "That stove is utterly ruined," said the chief editor. I said I believed it was. "Well, no matter. Don't want it this kind of weather. I know the man that did it. I'll get him. Now, here's the way this stuff ought to be written." I took the manuscript. It was scarred with erasures and interlineations till its mother wouldn't have known it if it had one. It now read as follows. Spirit of the Tennessee Press. The inveterate liars of the semi-weekly Earthquake are evidently endeavoring to palm off upon a noble and chivalrous people another of their vile and brutal falsehoods with regard to that most glorious conception of the 19th century, the Ballyhack Railroad. The idea that Buzzardville was to be left off at one side originated in their own fulsome brains, or rather the settlings, which they regard as brains. They had better swallow this lie if they want to save their abandoned reptile carcasses the cowhiding they so richly deserve. That ass, Blossom, of the Higginsville Thunderbolt and Battle Cry of Freedom, is down here again sponging at the Van Buren. We observe that the besotted blaggard of the Bud Springs Morning Howl is giving out, with his usual propensity for lying, that Van Werter is not elected. The heaven-born mission of journalism is to disseminate truth, to eradicate error, to educate, refine, and elevate the tone of public morals and manners, and make all men more gentle, more virtuous, more charitable, and always better and holier and happier. And yet this black-hearted scoundrel degrades his great office persistently to the dissemination of falsehood, calumny, vituperation, and vulgarity. Blathersville wants a Nicholson pavement. It wants a jail and a poorhouse more. The idea of a pavement in a one-horse town composed of two gin mills, a blacksmith shop, and that mustard plaster of a newspaper, the Daily Hurrah. The crawling insect Buckner, who edits the Hurrah, is braying about this business with his customary imbecility and imagining that he is talking sense. Now that is the way to write. Peppery and to the point. Mush and milk journalism gives me the fantods. About this time, a brick came through the window with a splintering crash and gave me a considerable jolt in the back. I moved out of range. I began to feel in the way. Chief said, "That was the colonel, Lackley. I've been expecting him for 2 days. He'll be up now right away." He was correct. The colonel appeared in the door a moment afterward with a dragoon revolver in his hand. He said, "Sir, have I the honor of addressing the poltroon who edits this mangy sheet?" "You have. Be seated, sir. Be careful of the chair. One of its legs is gone. I believe I have the honor of addressing the putrid liar, Colonel Blatherskite Tecumseh?" "Right, sir. I have a little account to settle with you. If you're at leisure, we will begin. I have an article on the encouraging progress of moral and intellectual development in America to finish, but there's no hurry. Begin." Both pistols rang out their fierce clamor at the same end. This is Mark Twain. It's called Journalism in Tennessee. It is hilarious. And the thing is, Twain had spent many of his formative years in Virginia City, Nevada, and in the roaring heyday of San Francisco, California. He was also familiar with the Deep South as well. It's those little lines that he throws in that really sort of grab me, and it's why I went running for this text. I love this line. "Right, sir, I have a little account to settle with you. If you are at leisure, we will begin." And the chief responds, "I have an article on the encouraging progress of moral and intellectual development in America to finish, but there is no hurry. Begin." That's when the pistol shots ring out. And, of course, there's that previous line in the screed, the editor writes, "The heaven-born mission of journalism is to disseminate truth, to eradicate error, to educate, refine, and elevate the tone of public morals and manners, and make all men more gentle, more virtuous, more charitable, and an always better and holier and happier. And yet this black-hearted scoundrel degrades his great office persistently to the dissemination of falsehood, calumny, vituperation, and vulgarity. Perhaps it is a failing of humankind that we tend to believe that whatever happens in our age, our era, is the only time it has happened. This nation, we had best understand in a damn hurry, was birthed in blood. And I'm not talking about 1776. I'm talking about 1607. I'm talking about, 1529 when the Spanish arrived in the god St. Augustine and the Valley of Mexico. And it's been blood ever since, and we have yet to grow tired of it. And the Virginia Tech story will stay in the news as long as the blood sells. Don't think it gives me any pleasure to say this. It doesn't. It's disgusting. I had just as soon sit around and have civil political discourse about the direction this country is going, but you know what? I'm not going to quit until the other side does. Now, I'm not going to be using the B word to describe George Bush's mama or his wife or his two gin-sodden daughters. And I'm not going to use some racist plantation epithet to describe Condi Rice, because you know what? Condi Rice is incompetent enough that all I have to do is point to the facts of her existence. Do I, you know, all I have to do with Condi Rice is remind you, you heard, I'd say this about her if it was Condi Rice. Okay, Beck, what would you say about her if you found out Condi Rice was at the theater watching Spamalot while New Orleans drowned? Well, she's just an individual. What can she do? She's a Secretary of State. Member of the Cabinet. But I hope you get what I'm getting at. I'm not trying to... There's no gratuity in all of this. This does all come together. No, Imus, with his remarks about the Rutgers women's basketball team, didn't cause what happened at Virginia Tech. But this culture did. This culture where you can get a handgun or 12. Did. And this culture that values the ability to get a handgun more than it values the ability to read, did. Now, if you disagree with me, you are welcome to take issue, and we will have a sane and civil discussion about it. But please, milksop journalism gives me the fantods. Milk and mush journalism gives me the fantods. That's what you get out of the mainstream media, the pontificating of Tom Brokaw. I don't know if you saw Press the Meat on Sunday, but Gwen Ifill took Tim Russert to task. There were heated discussions inside NBC. Yeah, a week later. I'm not buying. They're selling. I'm not buying. And I am not going to stand back, and I'm not going to stop speaking strongly and forcefully and factually unless something causes me to stop. Okay? Because the other side's never going to stop. They've won elections this way year in and year out, and they're not going to quit a winner. No, sir. And they're certainly not going to tell the truth, because if they have to start telling the truth, they have to lose. And they have to get out of power. Or stop trying to take power. Yes, Lord, yes. Well, we're going to go to the news. We'll come back and take your phone calls. 304-658-5453, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. One man opened fire on students at Virginia Tech this morning, killing 32 people before turning the gun on himself. Another 29 people were hurt, either shot or trying to escape. The shooting rampage is the worst in U.S. history. From the U.S. president to lawmakers to communities across the nation, messages of grief and support are being sent out to those affected by the unprecedented massacre. 11 deaths are being blamed on a strong nor'easter that continues to dump record rainfall on some areas of New York, which is now under a state of emergency. More than 1,400 residents have been evacuated. In Vermont, 17 inches of snow have fallen, and it continues to fall in Pennsylvania, New York, and Maine. Travel and power in many areas has been interrupted. In Baghdad, the political bloc loyal to Shia leader Muqtada al-Sadr has pulled out of the Iraqi government. The six cabinet members resigned to protest the refusal of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to set a timetable for U.S. troops to withdraw. A week of violence across Iraq has left at least 92 dead, four of those U.S. troops. Yesterday, 30 more bodies were found dumped throughout Baghdad. They're believed to be the victims of Shia death squads. Roadside bombs killed 8 people in Baghdad today, and 3 Iraqi policemen died in a friendly fire incident with U.S. troops. In northern Afghanistan, a suicide bomber ran into a police training field and blew himself up during morning exercises. 10 policemen died, dozens were wounded. Officials blame the attack on Taliban and Al-Qaeda. The French newspaper Le Monde reports French secret services warned the U.S. about the Al-Qaeda terrorist threat in the year before the 9/11 World Trade Center attacks. The paper says one of the 9 reports was titled "Plan to Hijack an Aircraft by Islamic Radicals" and was handed over to a CIA operative in Paris, but was never mentioned in the final U.S. Commission's report on the attacks. The BBC says it has no verification of a claim by a Palestinian militant group that it has killed its kidnapped reporter, Alan Johnston. Tomorrow, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez will appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee to answer questions about his role in the firing of 8 federal prosecutors. And Hawaiian singer Don Ho died Saturday of heart failure. He was 76. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At The Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Tomorrow, for the first time, the UN Security Council will begin discussions on climate change. Britain is spearheading the effort, which will examine how global climate changes could impact other facets of society, including one report that looks at the possible threat to U.S. national security. A new medical study by the National Cancer Institute of 500,000 American retirees finds that one extra daily serving of fruit or vegetables could reduce the chance of developing head and neck cancer. And the U.S. Olympic Committee has chosen Chicago as the American candidate to host the 2016 Summer Games. Chicago will now compete with foreign cities such as Madrid, Rio de Janeiro, Rome, and Tokyo. Google and Clear Channel have signed a deal permitting Google's online advertisers to be broadcast on Clear Channel's 675 radio stations nationwide. The financial aspects of that deal have not been released yet. In March, retail sales jumped 0.7%, the fastest rise since holiday sales in December. That has Wall Street looking on the bright side. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.67 on the New York Mercantile. And at the close of Wall Street today, well, the Dow closed up 108 points at 12,720. The NASDAQ closed up 26, and the S&P up 16. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right. I filibustered. sorry. Let's go straight to the phone. Susan's calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
A little depressed.
Yeah.
And I gather things are getting worse in West Virginia.
Yeah, I'm just finding out about this impending sludge dam collapse, and Jesus.
Yeah, I've been checking on it, and that's a 2.28 billion gallons?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like it's water or anything.
No.
Yeah. And for those not following, I don't know, maybe Nanette in the chat room will update me. Is this a Massey operation? We don't know. I don't know. But, yeah, it's one of those mountaintop removal-generated carcinogenic, toxic, filth-laden sludge operations. And these things are made out of dirt. And it's about this particular one is about 400 feet high. It's caving in at the top. It's collapsing at the bottom, and they're trying to evacuate.
Yeah, it's Eastern Association Coal Corporation Wells.
Eastern, okay.
Okay. Anyway, what got me is I checked their website, and it says, no evacuation information provided. Oh, crumb.
Ho-hum.
Yeah, ho-hum.
As that secular saint who passed last week might have said, so it goes.
Yeah. So
hi-ho.
The thing that I called in about...
Yeah.
...was, have you noticed... apparently, on the reports that we're hearing out of the school shooting. By the way, to put one thing to rest, in at least two cases that I know of, the fact, the Thurston, Oregon school shooting, and the one in the Dakotas, the shooter was stopped because a student knocked him down and sat on him.
Yeah, which I find interesting because this stupid little press release that I've been referencing throughout the program, Susan,
mm-hmm.
says, give me a second, I got to find it. Doggone it, there's a reference to Oregon.
Well,
and it says that Oregon is a state that allows people to carry guns to schools. Why do you think there have been no shootings in Oregon?
Oh, horse pucky, you show up with so much as a nail file.
Okay, well, stand by. Here it is. Isn't it interesting that Utah and Oregon are the only two states that allow faculty to carry guns on campus? And isn't it interesting that you haven't read about any school or university shootings in Utah or Oregon? Why not? Because criminals don't like having their victims shoot back at them. That's why the American people want an end to this ineffective gun ban.
Yeah, well, they're lying through their teeth. I suggest if there is a law like that, it's newly passed, and I think somebody did try and pass a law like that. It was soundly defeated because the citizens of Oregon look around and said, are you nuts?
Well, this press release says that if I will only have this freak on the show, that he will be able to convince my listeners.
Oh, yeah.
That we need to, among other things, 90% of Americans support the idea of allowing school principals to carry handguns to defend their students.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous. Yeah, right. If you show up with a gun at a school, it's off. They haul you off.
As well, they should.
Yeah. And as far as shootings in Oregon, Thurston High School, guy named Kip Kinkle, he's still in jail. He's going to be in jail for a long, long, long time.
Remember that name, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now, the reason I called is because, as you noticed, this shooting and apparently a lot of other shootings, not just school shootings, but have you noticed? How often they start out as domestics. What is it about guys that think they can own women?
Well, if I can't have her, nobody else. It's the caveman impulse, Susan.
have an answer to your little string of melodies you played on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
From the Phoenix.
Yeah.
He kicks Goodbye Earl.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, sure.
That's one of my favorite songs because the
I'm trying to remember who it is. There's a song, it's a country tune, and I always found it to be just deliciously illustrative of how unbearably stupid Sean Hannity is. At one point he was opening his song with it, you know, it's all God Bless America and blah, 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 blah. But if you get into the song a little bit, it's about a woman who blows away an abusive boyfriend, husband, whatever. Agnes might know which song it is, but yeah, he was playing it because it was patriotic.
Yeah, patriotic, my foot.
It's I think it's called the 4th of July. Okay, one of the music geniuses will probably we'll have to sort that one out.
Probably Billy's going to come up. Billy's going to come up with it and he's going to say, "Oh, by the way, here's it."
Yeah, this guy was this goober was opening his program, and I'm sorry. I mean, I guess that means I'm coarsening the discourse by referring to Sean Hannity as a goober. But you know what?
But he is a goober.
I know. We're just doing a little truth telling. Yeah, just a little tough love for America here, huh, Susan?
You know, it's like Glenn Beck is a sexist jerk. Well, he's actually a sexist pig, but we won't go into that. I'm sorry, he is. And he needs to go just as
right. And that's the thing. The media missed the boat completely on the whole Imus Gate or whatever you want to call it, because they did not talk about the right. You know, they said, well, you know, Imus was gotten rid of because the sponsors withdrew their money. Blah blah. It's the audience that drives this.
Yeah.
And it's the same crowd that if you watch the video. And I've said this, I hope I'm not boring people, but it's that video, maybe you can find it on YouTube still or something, where Ann Coulter calls John Edwards the...
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to get one of the copies of the video that shows the audience. And at first it's a... Love it. And they sort of look around to make sure everybody else is laughing, and once they're sure that all the other neocon sheep...
Yeah, then they all join.
Then they're all just busting a gut, and boy, ha ha ha, that sure is funny.
It's not funny.
No.
And just to get back on the right track, it was never a free speech issue. Imus is perfectly free to spout his crap all over the place. Provided he does it on something like that.
Right.
Bike. He does not have a right to do it on the positive. And that's the whole point. He wants to go to satellite like Stern did. Give free.
Well,
but I doubt if he could get anybody to pay, willing to pay for it.
I don't know. You know, he'll get some little... that's the funny thing. Imus will get some little corner of satellite, and, you know, there'll be somebody... And you know, we already know that Joe Lieberman, Holy Joe, has said that he will go running back and play kissy face with Imus because I'm a big believer in forgiveness.
Well, Holy Joe has a great big fat target on his back, and he better watch it. By the way, Agent Fred, I'm speaking metaphorically. I'm talking about
because after all, with these right wingers, they don't understand that because they lack that mental capacity. After all, we heard Glenn Beck say that he didn't understand what is.
Yeah, I'm speaking of a electoral target because the voters of Connecticut are going to toss you out on your tush.
Yeah, but that's going to be 2012.
Unless, of course, they amend the state constitution. They can do that, you know.
They can. They won't.
You never know if he gets them ticked off enough. never underestimate a whole bunch of ticked off people.
True enough, true enough. Susan, good hearing from you.
You take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And to our good buddy Luke, calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program. Luke. Oh, Luke, you didn't give up on me, did you? I was coming to... Oh, I really was. Luke. Okay. Well, that's... okay. 16 minutes past the hour. The phone number, of course, you already know, 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I'm trying to get some follow-up information on this business going down in southern West Virginia. It's very disturbing. Terrifying is what it is. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Past. I'm Bob. You know that. And we're going to head straight back to the phones. One quick question, or just a quick observation. The shooter in the Virginia Tech case is now being described in one story I read as a young Asian male. And in another, the other account, and this is just a kind of bizarre, saying that he was wearing a Boy Scout type uniform. The students tried to blockade the door, but the shooter, dressed in a Boy Scout type outfit, made it inside. Boy Scout. What looks a lot like a Boy Scout outfit that you might wear in college? I'll leave it up to you to draw the conclusion. Let's go to the phones. Luke, we've got you back, buddy. How are you?
I'm sorry. I grayed out. My fault.
Well, yeah, God, that's not a good sign, dude. That means I'm boring.
No, it wasn't that. I actually just got comfortable with my problem. You know how that gets sometimes. You get sit down, you're in the chair, back, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fact we don't talk about a whole lot here at the network, Luke. I actually do this program seated on a bed of nails.
I say sometimes you have to do that. I tell you what, because I just leaned back, and next thing I heard, deet, 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 deet. It's like, come on.
Right.
It's like, kill the phone. Okay.
You'd like to sometimes.
I know. But, okay, let's see where we start on this. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yes, Mr. Beck. Let's see. Now, this is the same Mr. Beck as I remember who also referred to Miss O'Donnell by a name.
Why, yes, he did.
And he went on her. He was like, called her a name, and then what was it? Blubber was coming out of every pore of her body. You know, it's like, God. And I'm sitting there going, you know, as we said, Sean Hannity is the life support system for a haircut, and as we said, Glenn Beck's didn't make it. You know, so really, Glenn Beck shouldn't talk about how people look. You know,
why is it? I mean, I would love to have. Even second, third, fourth hand, I would love to know why, really, you know, not the PR version, but really why CNN Headline News hired him.
Well, think of it. They don't, you know, with most of their shows, they put them on once, then maybe 4 or 5 hours later, they repeat it. Him, they put him on at 7 and repeat him at 9. You know, they might as well just make it continuous and just put him on a loop. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like, guys, you can't find anybody else? You know, it's like, God. I mean, dear Lord, Mike lives there in town. Put Mike on for an hour.
Sure. But, you know, then again, we also know that Mike would tell truth and that he wouldn't put up with crap and that he probably wouldn't be willing to have the putative father of Anna Nicole Smith's baby on the program.
This, too, is true. You know how it is. You have to make that deal with the devil. Well, like I say, I saw Crooks and Liar has so many nice videos right now today. You've got, like I say, Mr. Franken was on, you know.
Yeah, and he blistered Beck.
Yeah, he blistered Larry King. King was just sitting there like, you're sitting there going, Larry, breathe. Come on, breathe. You know.
Clear.
Yeah, come on. I tell you the one that surprised me, and I'm going to have to start watching her now, I guess, is over on Court.
Catherine Cryer?
Yeah, the Catherine Cryer thing. That was really good. You know what I mean? That was surprising. Not that she was good. I just hadn't heard her. You know what I mean? Do one of her sort of a commentary.
I can see where a lot of this is going, though, Luke. I just happened to be checking out Huffington Post earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they'd let me blog there, but I guess, you know, I don't know, my breath's bad or something, or, you know, haven't bought the right deodorant or something. But I noticed a post that Sheldon Drobny had put up about right-wing hate radio.
Okay.
And the thing that I scrolled down through the comments, and lo and behold, there it was. Well, Keith Olbermann needs to go now because he's a religious bigot. He's bigoted against people of faith. And so, you know, what they're trying to do...
If you really want to see who is the most put-upon people on this planet, you know, I've seen people have this discussion before. The people who you really want to say, if you want to say about religion, are atheists. You know what I mean? You can't admit you're an atheist. You might as well just take the knife out and start slitting your wrist.
Right, and the other, well, but the funny thing is, as Sam Harris points out in both The End of Faith and in Letter to a Christian Nation, every single Christian in America is an atheist of some form or another, because they're an atheist with regard to Islam, they're an atheist with regard to Hinduism, they're an atheist with regard to Buddhism, they're atheists with regard to the Greek pantheon, the ancient Norse pantheon, they're atheists with regard to Wicca, and to a certain extent, among the more fundamentalist Protestant sects, they're vitriolically atheist toward the Catholic pantheon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's amazing. You know, I tell you what, when every kid, and I did this when I was in my early 20s, I tell you, I think every kid when they're about 15 or 16, they ought to take them and let them go out every week to a different church just to see what's out there. You know, I mean, it's nice that mom and dad have told you this is their church, but you need to go out and make your own decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you go out and visit the Greek Orthodox Church. Go out and visit, go to the Mass. You know,
check
you
out know. The Baha'i. Check out the Sikhs. Check
oh,
out the...
You know, go around and just see what's out there. I mean, you may find something that may just absolutely just click for you, you know. But who knows? You know what I mean?
They're gonna try to find. You know, we've got a couple of little itsy bitsy liberal voices out there, and the right wing is already screaming that they need to be silenced.
I've been watching taping because I'm at work. Been taping the last few week or so, been taping The View, because I've been enjoying listening to Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Bill Maher on today.
That must have been fun.
Oh, I tell you what, it's, you know, there's Elizabeth, you know, and you could tell once or twice that Bill was sitting there saying things about doesn't trust any religion, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just hear her, you could hear her blood pressure climb. You didn't even have to think about it. But, oh, I told Agnes when I first came on.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till we get done. I'm sure sometime before we get done with this thing up Virginia Tech that this kid, of course, was operating on secret sealed orders from Saddam Hussein.
Well, I've been waiting all day for the word to come out of Guantanamo or where the hell ever that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had confessed to having planned the whole thing.
I still say he looks good for the Cock Robin killing. You know, it's like say, oh,
probably responsible for the price of gas around here too.
I know, you know what I mean. Oh, I heard you talking earlier today when I first got home about the Regent lawyers.
Yeah,
and you know, I've come to a decision on this thing. You know what? In the Bush administration, the new rule is loyalty Trump's
competence,
but every time, but loyalty goes only one way. You do know that.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you have to be loyal to George until you're of no value to George.
And then they're not loyal to you anymore. Well, and classic case in point for that, Luke, is big-time Dick Cheney's appearance on Face the Schieffer.
I know.
And have you talked to him? Nope, haven't talked to him since the conviction. you're a hell of a friend there, Dick.
Well, you know, I told you the thing last week, you know, the thing about Bill Orley.
Yeah.
You know, where he had some story, this probably a couple of weeks ago, where he was doing some, because he didn't have him on, but he was doing the story about Snoop Dogg, and he's been on that for a couple of weeks, you know, been on Snoop, and put that, like I say, when it came up underneath there on the Chiron underneath, it was rap star / convicted felon, and you're sitting there going, gee, I'm waiting to see when he has Scooter Libby on. I'd love seeing that. Or, gee, Gordon Liddy, come on, let's have that. I want to see that radio talk show host / convicted felon. But amazingly enough, I bet you 10-1 it won't happen.
No, because that would, well, Bill, they don't make Depends big enough for the way that Bill would wet himself just to be in the same county with a terrifying man like Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Now, tomorrow, we're going to have Gonzo Gate. It is going to strike the fan.
No.
Oh, they moved it?
It's been postponed due to the Virginia Tech shooting.
Okay.
Although, you know, that just blows me away. Well, you know, Attorney General Gonzalez, as the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States, has to be able, he cannot be distracted by these hearings. He has to be able to get information and disseminate orders. I mean, what it was.
This is Alberto Gonzalez, whose main defense, from what I've been reading all this stuff, is A, either I'm crazy, or B, I'm totally incompetent.
Or C, pick one.
Yeah. Or C, I've never been here before. I've been living in Texas. You've been talking to somebody else for the last 5 years. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, dear Lord, it's like...
Exactly.
He's going to reach up and rip off the rubber mask and Nixon underneath it.
Yeah, so that's been bumped back to Thursday.
Okay.
By Thursday, it may be necessary. You know, he may be so deeply involved in the command center.
Well, the other one that gets to me is, and I saw this today over at Huffington Post, and I agree with this one. I think what's going to be interesting is this whole email story. Is this thing about because they've, quote-unquote, lost the emails, does this mean we get to reopen the Plame case and the Abramoff case? Because, as I remember, in both these cases, the White House was instructed to turn over all correspondence.
Yeah.
And amazingly enough,
sure
enough didn't.
And while we're at it, I don't know the nature of what you do for a living, but I do a lot of email.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm certainly no expert on, you know, the Windows XP operating system or Mac OS ? Or whatever. But it's awfully hard, and maybe, you know, maybe our IT professional could clear this up for us. It's awfully hard to get rid of emails, you know, permanently.
Well, I mean,
but wait, the other thing, Luke, that drives me nuts is I got to thinking about it. When I go into my email, I've got an inbox, and I've got trash, and I've got spam, you know, different files.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got a sent file. And everything that I write goes into the sent file.
Well, you know, and the thing is, on these big commercial servers, as I understand it, they have to keep tapes or some form of alternate media in case they suffer damage. So somewhere there should be something. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's diskettes or drums or what anymore, you know, what the preferred choice is anymore.
Yeah.
But somewhere on all these things, there may be backups.
Well,
if they talked to somebody and they said, you know, you'd have to erase this thing 100 times before you kill it.
But maybe it's different. But see, if it was the government thing, I could understand security and, you know, they'd have a server to server intranet kind of connection, whatever. But they were using the RNC's email accounts, which means that it wasn't that secure. And if I understand, then maybe I just don't understand the series of tubes correctly, Luke. I mean, it's possible that I'm just
yes, Senator Stevens.
Yeah. maybe I'm just completely wrong about this, but that thing's going to bounce through servers from here to Hooterville.
One thing is the server on your end, the server on the server's end. You know what I mean? And it's through different ones. It doesn't go directly into the main server.
No, that's why it's a net a network.
Well, if I say. It's a company that we found out during all this is a company down in Chattanooga is where the RNC server lives.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. There was this guy. He was mayor of Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Names, help me here.
Corker.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be Mayor Corker.
Jungle Drums Corker. That's him. Yes, indeedy. But like I say, you know what I mean?
Lord, it all just sort of comes together after a while. You don't even have to be all crazy and beautiful mind. They're doing it for us.
it's one of those things. It's like, isn't it amazing how coincidence it just seems to always rear its ugly head in this in stories like this? One right after the other, it's like, isn't it amazing? Carl Rowe's emails were accidentally erased. For 4 years, they were accidentally erased.
That's a hell of an accident.
I was going to say, damn, just keep doing the same accident, one right after the other. Isn't that amazing?
At some point, it becomes, a pattern, a practice. maybe I mentioned earlier that Dick Cheney hadn't spoken to Scooter Libby since the conviction. Maybe there's a reason for that, Luke. And maybe it's the same reason, you know, that four-year-long accident. Maybe if Dick Cheney talks to Scooter Libby, maybe he becomes indictable under the RICO statute.
It's sort of like, if you talk to the vice president, we're of course going to have you go hunting with him. You know, and this time he gets to aim.
Not going to get him liquored up this time.
Oh God, I still to this day, every time I hear anybody talk about that, I just keep on wanting to say, can we say the term Swiss Miss? Please, I want to hear somebody ever write the story on that.
Oh, with many marshmallows.
Well, I tell you what, bud, I see we missed the bottom of the hour.
That's okay, Luke. I'm sorry I kept you waiting so long.
No, it's always good to talk to you. No. All righty, then. Let me let you go on.
Your specially constructed head-on radio network seat of nails will be on its way to you.
I know. You know how it is. I'll have to wear the ring of thorns around my neck, so every time my head falls down, I'll stab myself.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. We'll get you one of those little dog collars with the shock thing on there.
No, I started to like that. I had to quit that. I'm the moment!
All right, take it easy.
Have a good evening.
Bye now.
Bye.
I get this little tingling in my neck, and it's... Turn it up. Turn it up, Agnes. I got an email here from our good pal Georgia out in California. The song I mentioned, well, Georgia wins. It's Martina McBride's Independence Day. See, 4th of July, Independence Day. I knew, it's like a steel trap, only rusted shut. Georgia says, typical neocon cherry-picking that part that suits his purpose and highlighting it, talking about that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity. What ignorant sheep not to know the whole song. If they weren't so dangerous, they'd be funny. Keep fighting, says Georgia. And now dig it. This is the lyric, and I don't know if he's still doing it. You'd have to ball bat me to make me sit down and listen to Sean Hannity's radio program. Sean Hannity's theme song, Independence Day by Martina McBride. Here are the lyrics. Now it's all full of, you know, hoop-de-doo music, and well, she seemed all right by dawn's early light, though she looked a little worried and weak. And she tried to pretend he wasn't drinking again, but Daddy left the proof on her cheek. And I was only 8 years old that summer, and I always seemed to be in the way, so I took myself down to the fair in town on Independence Day. Well, this is just literature night, isn't it? Well, word gets around in a small, small town. They said he was a dangerous man, but Mama was proud and she stood her ground. She knew she was on the losing end. Some folks whispered, some folks talked, but everybody looked the other way. And when time ran out, there was no one about on Independence Day. Chorus. And this is the part they just love on the Hannity Show. Let freedom ring, let the white dove sing, let the whole world know that today is a day of reckoning. Let the weak be strong, let the right be wrong. Roll the stone away, let the guilty pay, it's Independence Day. I mean, they get into a patriotic bedwetting frenzy about that. Final verse. Well, she lit up the sky that 4th of July by the time the firemen come. They just put out the flames and took down some names and sent me to the county home. Now, I ain't saying it's right or it's wrong, but maybe it's the only way talk about your revolution. It's Independence Day. Repeat chorus. Roll the stone away. It's Independence Day. Jesus. This is the Head-On Radio Network. Agnes, bad, bad girl. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is for all you girls about 13. High school can be so...
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together, we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
I never knew that everything was falling through. That everyone I knew was waiting on a cue to turn and run when all I needed was the truth. But that's how it's got to be. It's coming down to nothing more than apathy. I'd rather...
Quarter before the hour, as we roll down to sort of wind up tonight's show, let's do it with a great conversation. Our good buddy Albert calls in from Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm getting along, I reckon.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day out here. I'm out here in shorts. I'm finally, the snow's gone and everything's, and I hear about that horrible news out in Virginia, and that just kind of puts a dampen on me, and then I hear how they slime in terms of this whole Gonzalez lost email nonsense.
It just makes you want to scream.
I'll tell you what, you know, you may not know a little bit about computers, but I know quite a bit about computers. And you don't lose anything. With Windows operating systems, it is continuously logged. Okay, the only way you can actually lose something is if you shut off system restore, okay, and then do like a Gutman wipe, which is where it rewrites over the material about 30-something times. And it runs by like ones and zeros, and then it runs like pseudo random data. And that's really the only way you could lose something like that. You don't lose logs like that. I mean, you know, there are programs where, you know, even on your own computer, you could, install them, and just like kind of look at your different sectors, and you'd be surprised at the kinds of stuff you'll find on your computer, depending on how old your hard drive is. You know, and this is the federal government, so you know that they can afford, you know, terabyte-sized hard drives, and you know, just about everything could fit on a terabyte. So
yeah, well, and technically, that's the thing that I keep coming back to, Albert, is that this RNC server is not a government server.
True. Okay.
That's
irrelevant, though.
But I mean, that I'm guessing the security level is probably not quite what you would expect in a security clearance oriented sort of government situation.
Mm-hmm. You never know. You know, this is the Republicans we're talking about. It could be even higher.
Well, true. they spend the money on the good stuff, and
And
Katrina, the federal government system.
Yeah, let those. Who cares about those people? We don't want to ruin our beautiful minds, and you know they're living in the dome there. Yeah, but it's good for them now. You know, they're living in the Houston Astrodome, and you know, now they have something to eat, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Barbara.
Oh, classy lady, classy.
Oh, these people, Bob.
to be honest, Albert, I have done a lot of introspection since the Imus thing broke. Thinking about whether or not I'm cheapening the discourse or whatever it is, whatever sanctimonious phrase it was that Tom Brokaw used. We try to deal in facts, and sometimes I can't just call him President Bush because the word president hangs in my throat like sour vomit. You know, I mean, he's destroyed any respect that I had for that office.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Really sad. Yeah, I'm the same way. Yeah, I'm the same way. But no, you know, I don't even know what the appeal. I grew up, you know, I grew up in New York, and there's WFAN, and that was where he was on. And you know, I don't understand what his appeal was. He just was a cantankerous old cokehead. Who would sound hungover, you know, and just...
Yeah, half the time, if I'd go across seeing him on MSNBC or something, Albert, it looked like it was a miracle he made it into work.
I know. And then all of a sudden, I saw him on TV, and he says he's wearing this big old hat. The guy's crazy.
This is radio. You don't put people who look like Don Imus on TV.
He's crazy, that guy. I mean, but that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, that was a thing that I noticed in New York would happen. Bob Grant was kind of... This is back right before, you know, Rush Limbaugh became huge and all this other stuff, and I grew up with this stuff, and I remember when the right-wing radio onslaught really, really began in its, you know, modern phase. And, you know, hatred sells because it's easy. You know, it's easy for these people to, you know, it just is. It's easy to hate. It's easier, you know, it's easy to segregate. We've talked about this all
right.
the time. I mean, and that's what it is, and that's where I'm. It's so good. I'm glad. I'm glad that finally people are saying, maybe we can get some good people on there. Maybe this is going to make some room. Unfortunately, it's probably just going to make more little baby Jesus Hannitys, and you know.
Again, I mentioned that a few minutes ago. You might not have been tuned in at that point in time, but it's something that we on the left have to pay attention to. If we don't, we're never going to build. We're never going to build the infrastructure required to keep talkers out there. I'm 44 years old. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Most of our big time talkers are older than me, not younger.
Mm-hmm.
Even on our network, John Fox is a little bit younger than me. Joe Vecchio is a couple of years older than me. Mark Levine, I think he's a couple of years younger than me. But there's no teenager working his way through high school at a radio station instead of at Burger Thing.
Yeah.
But developing talent, we're not doing that. And that's one of the things that I hope down the line the Horn can turn into. We have got to develop talent for what happens 10 years from now. Because if we suddenly were able to get rid of Rush and Hannity and the whole filthy crowd all at once, you know what? We got no way to fill the vacuum.
Well, it's kind of like the Republican presidential candidates, huh? So,
yeah.
You know. I'm 29. Maybe I should start. Maybe I should go get a degree or something.
No, it doesn't take a degree. You just got to read till you're blue in the face and try to know everything coming and going.
I do that already for free.
Yeah, well, see, I do too. It's one of those things that endears me to my lovely wife.
But see, yeah, I know, I got, yeah, I know. I know that totally. But, you know, actually, that's the thing, it's like, why, you know, you do it for a different reason than Rush Limbaugh and all those other guys do it. And these other guys do it because, you know, they like to build a wall of, you know, slime around them to kind of protect their millions and millions. You're trying to sit there and you're trying to better the world by, you know, waking other people up, talking and letting people have a discourse about things that are actually important to the majority. And the majority, even if you think you're a Republican or whatever, the majority is us because we're poor. We're the working poor. We're the people that, you know, if you get laid off and you're out, you know, 4 months down the road, you're homeless. Okay,
yeah.
And you know, these are the kinds of things that are important. These are the kinds of things that like matter to you.
And you know, I'm not trying to be anybody's hero. I don't want to be, but I do want that conversation. But I also, you know, when the right wing makes fun of working people and people who are, you know, one paycheck away from disaster, I understand it. I mean, if everything hadn't have been so grave today. I had this thing started about I'm going into the country music songwriting business because, among other things, I'm sitting here prepping for the show today, and a third of the shingles on one side of my roof got blown off. And, frankly, you know, I have no idea how I'm going to fix it because I haven't roofed anything in 25 years. I haven't priced a bundle of shingles. I'm praying it doesn't rain, but I couldn't have gone up on the – we had 60-mile-an-hour straight-line winds today.
Really?
And I couldn't have, you know, that's why it was a little under my fingernails when you were talking about how beautiful it is in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I couldn't have gotten up on the roof. I would have blown away like door, like you know, Ms. Gulch on the bicycle, for God's sakes. But I know we understand what is going on in people's lives. We understand what it, and you know, so I hope that brings at least a little level of authenticity to some of this.
You're real. That's why I listen to you. You're a real person, you know. You do your own food shopping.
Yeah, I do that, and I'm going to have my own busted thumbs in another day or so after. I hate roofing. I hate it.
Yeah, they're not too bad. Hey, you know what you can do? Do this. Now they have these shingles that are actually solar panels, but they look like shingles. So, yeah, you might have to put a little money out front. Yeah, but at the same time, your electric bill might go down.
Yeah, fire up the printing press, Agnes. We're going to put a little money out front. Oh, but yeah. You know, no, there's no let up in it. It's that and you know, when the check engine light comes on in the truck and and the fuel pump seems to be going in the other one and it's $4,000 for a new heat pump that went out, you know, 3 months ago.
Yep.
You know, I don't think it's a function of being irresponsible, Albert. It's just
this is
part of the whole gig of being a grown up.
Exactly, and that's how I don't understand this whole thing, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, because it's the same time. I mean, you know, these people don't live in a real world. I mean, the really real world, I mean, you know, we work. we work our fingers to the bone. You know, we sit here and we scrimp and save. We don't, you know, we don't blow our money on things that are just, you know, maybe a little treat here and there, but we don't just sit there and go out and, you know, blow our money on just frivolous things. I mean, we're sitting here, we're trying to make ends meet, and next thing you know, boop. What happens if you're driving down the road? You didn't. You've been putting off, you know, getting your timing belt done, and that thing breaks. Your engine's gone. Now
yeah,
you get a new car.
Yeah, especially if it's like some sort of 6-cylinder, 24 valve. You know.
Yeah.
And if it turns once, you don't just lunch all the intakes or all the output. No, you lunch them all.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. You need a whole new engine or a brand new vehicle. And yeah, that's the thing. You know, these people make me ill. These people just make me ill. I was watching there. I have seen. Speaking of this one, you know, I've gone through my own rough times. But I was watching. What was that movie? The Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah.
And man, that was an uncomfortable movie to go through because it's like I've been through some of that shit. And he obviously went through far worse. But you know, like, but that's like reality. I mean, that was one of them few Hollywood movies that actually kind of made you uncomfortable because usually they don't. Usually it's always it did end well, I guess, you know, but. For a while there, I mean, you know, what do you do when you have a kid and you have this and you have this and, you know, you're trying to get ahead and just sometimes, you know, not everybody can win the lotto. Not everybody can be in the lucky sperm club, you know, so.
Yeah, born on third and thinking he hit a triple.
Yeah. Exist, man. There you go. That's the president.
Yep.
These people. Yeah. You know, I don't know where we're going to go with this, but
I don't know what you know. It's moments like this, Albert. I don't know what happens to the country. I don't know what happened. You know, not 100 years from now. I don't know what this country's like 10 years from now. And I've never been in that place before.
Yeah. No, I'm there with you. I'm there with you. No, I mean.
And you know, you got little ones.
Mm-hmm. I just had them at the park, and there's an 8-year-old at the park with a cell phone. Now, there's something about that I understand, like, you know, because you want to keep, you know, if you want to keep track, you want to be able to call your kid, you know, and say, hey, come home for dinner or what have you. But then there's also that, you know, that whole health aspect of that. You know, in Germany they had they set up this little thing where they actually had two. If there's a picture of it, you can go look it out online, where they have two cell phones, and they have them in cigarette packs, and then they put a little teacup, and they put an egg in it. And they had one cell phone call the other cell phone, and within 60 minutes, that egg was completely cooked. Now, that's why I say that. I mean, like, what kind of world are we going to live in where we're giving 8-year-old cell phones when these things can cook eggs for 60, you know, in 60 minutes?
I kid you not. It's not because you brought it. Well, it is kind of because you brought it up. But I saw a toddler walking through a store the other day with a cell phone, a real cell phone. This wasn't some toy. Talking, you know, Yeah, you know how it is with a toddler, about every eighth word.
Uh-huh.
But just walking along, holding mommy's hand with the cell phone up against his head, yapping away.
Yeah. And you know what's going to happen? I mean, as the value of a dollar goes lower and lower and lower and lower, and it buys less and less and less and less, and then all of a sudden when there's this giant, you know, brain cancer epidemic, you know, because you've given these kids with developing brains these radio devices and microwave devices, and they're sitting there walking around with them, and they're just talking away. I mean, this little girl, she's at the park. She's just sitting there talking with her friends, but she's just sitting there talking away. She's probably talking a good 20 minutes.
I wish you'd called earlier. We're out of time, Albert.
I'm sorry. It was a beautiful day. I had to get out there.
I can dig that. Have a great night, will you?
Right, you too. All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya. Bye. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Agnes. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk who has a fundraiser going on and needs your help.
Get well, Glenda. We love you.
Absolutely. And thanks to the thousands of members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights who are building the American dream. Sweet dreams, little Liza. And RMR. It's all for you. This breaking news story just in, Al-Qaeda number 3 confesses to stealing the lost White House emails in the DOJ case. Senate votes to lift stem cell ban. House committee asks oil firm CEOs to explain why gas might soon cost $4 per gallon. Retirement rumors loom over senator with attorneys-linked ethics problem. Massachusetts office offers details on health coverage. Senate subcommittee to consider legislative response to FBI's national security letter abuses. Senate panel seeks missing White House records. Al-Qaeda number 3. Christian conservatives' power diminished ahead of 2008 vote. Obama challenges McCain on Iraq stroll. Nuclear power enters global warming debate. Democrats seek to lead the way in tax overhaul. The ethical dilemma of robotics. Three scenarios for 2008.
Did Bush plan the Iraq regime change before becoming president? Waiting is the hardest part for troops in limbo in Iraq. Most Americans see recession in the next 12 months. U.S. launches fresh accusations at Iran over Iraq. Iran to issue book and CD on capture of British soldiers. Studies shows NYC a top greenhouse gas producer, and China's inevitable rise risks conflict, says Kissinger. These are the issues ahead. Into the Wolf's Den, starting now.